Blog Talk Radio.
It's time to strap our boots on. This is a perfect day to die. Wipe the blood out of our eyes. In this life there's no surrender, and there's nothing left for us to do. Find the strength to see this through.
Hello, folks. Thank you once again for coming to Bard's Logic Political Talk, part of the Growing Conservative Conversation, and also part of the Patriot Journalist Network. And you can find us at the Patriot Journalist Network by going to www.patriotjournalist.com. Also visit us at the Bard's Logic Political Talk website by going to www.bardslogicpoliticaltalk.com. Tonight we have a special guest on, and that is the conservative challenger to Senator Mitch McConnell, Matt Bevin, and we'll be interviewing him tonight. And I believe we have him on, so we'll later on read the from here or his website, his bio. Go ahead. But without any further ado, I want to bring him on. So thank you, Mr. Bevin, for coming to the show. How are you?
There we go. Let me try that. Can you guys hear me okay?
I can hear you great. Thank you.
Terrific.
Great. Thank you very much for coming to the show. How are you today? It sounds like we have some. Oh, the line dropped, but we'll have him shortly, I'm sure. Or maybe he's just going to retest the lines. So let me wait to see if it calls back in. So while we're at it, I'll read a little bit. Of course, join me, the host tonight, talking with our guest, as well as conservative activist Cindy Todd, as well as James Neighbors and Kelly Mordecai, along with Dan Gray. So we'll be hearing from us this evening. And, of course, as I said earlier, oh, there we go. Let's try him back in. Is that better for you?
It seems that I've got a decent connection with you, but I'm not sure I lost you there for a moment.
Sounds good. Yes, it looks like we got disconnected for a few moments, and then we're back.
Well, thank you for having me on tonight. I truly appreciate it.
Well, and I appreciate you coming on. I was looking at your schedule today, and you had definitely had a busy day. So before we go to the other questions, just a little bit about what you're doing today.
Today I've been in northern Kentucky, and it has been a busy day, but it's been outstanding. I mean, started out with a breakfast with a bunch of business folks and just discussing this campaign, and then moving from there on to meet with some various other establishments, some businesses, some hardware stores, some kind of local gathering places, a couple of meet and greets, wound up with a meet and greet this evening, and then spent some time with a reporter who's a national reporter following this campaign. So just another day in the life, but very good. It's been just an outstanding day. It really has.
Awesome. And I'll begin here with a question that I ask all the candidates that they come on. So what brought you into the race, and what motivates you to moving forward?
I mean, more than anything, the fact that as a nation we have a crippling level of debt that if we don't address it is going to render every other thing that any of us care about to be a moot point. I'm a husband. I'm a father of 9 children. I'm a small business owner. I've got a lot of people that are depending on me, depending on my ability to continue to create jobs for them in the case of the companies and to provide food and shelter for them in the case of my children. I look at where we're going as a nation, and I wonder what's happening to the American dream. And I'm a military veteran. I'm a guy who grew up in a pretty simple way. But more than anything, I realize if we don't start to elect men and women who understand how the wealth of this nation is created, then we are then nothing is going to be resolved in Washington, D.C. on the fiscal front.
Now let's start talking about some issues and discuss your stance on issues such as spending, including comparisons with yourself and, of course, Mr. McConnell on raising the debt limit and bailouts. What is your stance on those two issues, and how do you differ from Mitch McConnell, and what would you do differently?
Yeah, I mean, let's address them in reverse order. With respect to the bailouts, I've been adamantly opposed always to the idea of using federal tax dollars to bail out irresponsible companies. I mean, taking money from the American taxpayer and using it to bail out financially irresponsible companies is a bad idea. It is not the role of government to pick winners and losers. So I'm very much opposed to that. Mitch McConnell, on the other hand, a strong supporter of all the above, voted against the will of the people of Kentucky and most of America to bail out the Wall Street banks and Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac, and then came out and told us that this was the finest hour in Senate history, which was a bit of a push, I think. So big difference between he and I on that front. The other, as it relates to the debt ceiling, we cannot borrow our way out of debt, and we cannot print our way out of debt. And I don't think that has resonated with Mitch McConnell. He has voted for 14 debt ceiling increases in a row. And on this latest one, where I was strongly opposed to giving a clean, quote-unquote, you know, clean debt ceiling bill to the president, Mitch McConnell ended up breaking the back of the conservatives like Ted Cruz and like Mike Lee and others who said we've got to hold ourselves to financial account. He ended up casting the deciding vote for cloture to undermine their effort to do something, to cut somewhere, to do something in a fiscally responsible nature. I would have done the exact. I would have been with those 17 that did not vote for this. I think this is the kind of thing that has been destroying our country, is that we have career politicians in both parties who end up colluding with one another and end up being versions of the exact same thing. And this fiscal irresponsibility by Mitch McConnell, not only on this latest debt ceiling increase, but on the budgeting, the continuing resolution, his votes to fund Obamacare, all of this, big differences between he and I on a fiscal front.
Yeah, I heard a commercial today, actually, you know, as I was coming home, and it said, it was a Mitch McConnell commercial, saying that you were Obama's, but, you know, best friend, and that they actually dubbed you Bailout Bevin, which surprised me, especially after reading your stances on bailouts. Would you like to answer an ad such as that?
Well, yeah, I mean, when you have he has spent $12 million in this race so far lying about me, and you notice everything he attacks me for is something that he's weak on. He's weak on bailouts, so he will call me a bailout guy. He's weak on amnesty, so he'll try to say that I'm for amnesty. You do understand, of course, that in the world of politics, there is no slander or libel that applies, so you can say anything you want about somebody. And if you have millions of dollars to do it, you can do so. To say I'm a friend of Obama, that one is
yeah,
even the most remarkable of them all. I've never met the man, and I can assure you there's nothing I stand for that he would be a fan of at all on the ideological front. So, again, it's because Mitch McConnell has been Obama's best buddy. I mean, seriously, think about this. What do they call an unlimited spending ability by the president? What is that called on Capitol Hill? It's called the McConnell rule. Mitch McConnell is the one who wanted to give a blank check to Obama. Obama loves that. You know, who was it that wanted to fund Obamacare? And who could have stopped it? Mitch McConnell. But who voted for that funding, for cloture to allow that to move forward? Mitch McConnell. You think Obama doesn't love that? Who loves the idea of granting amnesty to people that are here illegally? Barack Obama. Who has voted repeatedly over 30 years to do exactly that? Mitch McConnell. So the two of them are best buds on just about everything that is critical, where McConnell should be on the opposite side of the equation. And so that's why he attacks me for it, because it's where he's weak.
Well, it sounds like it's kind of like the way they name bills, kind of the opposite of what they actually do, like the Affordable Health Care Act. So it
exactly.
Sounds like there might be the same thing going on here. But
or
I do want to get this
Act
out.
Or the, National Defense Authorization Act or any, you know, pick one. You're absolutely right.
There you go. There you go. We talk a bunch on those. But I want to get to the next. Some are saying, I want to definitely talk about this because I know it's important to the audience. But I hear some saying we ought to put social issues on the back burner until we fix our liberty and big government problems, such as like, but a federal judge recently here in Ohio called to recognize, is saying the state needs to recognize out-of-state gay marriage. What are your thoughts on this, and what are your general thoughts on the gay marriage issue and the right to life issue?
Well, I mean, again, I'll take them in reverse order. On the right to life issue, I'm very staunchly pro-life and have been. My reasons have far more to do with medical reality than anything else. It's hard for me to find any justification. In fact, it's impossible for me to find any justification for killing a human being for the convenience of another human being. I don't find that to be an argument that holds water. And so I'm staunchly pro-life as it relates to the gay marriage issue. I mean, I think it's not the government's role to define or redefine marriage. I don't believe government defined marriage as that between a man and a woman, which has always been the traditional view of marriage. I happen to be a proponent of that traditional view. I'm married and have been for 18 years. It's working great, and I think I'm going to stick with it. That said, there are differences of opinion on this subject. And the idea, though, that a single judge can come along and set aside the will of the people, as happened here in Kentucky, where a single unelected judge ended up coming and setting aside a ruling that 74% of Kentuckians had voted on, which was to define marriage as that between a man and a woman, and then that was set aside by a judge. I don't think that's the role for one individual to override the will of the people. That said, I don't think it's a business, a role that government should be sticking its nose into one way or the other. And to the extent that there needs to be codification and definition for tax reasons and others, let that be handled at the state level.
And one thing the government, of course, we're all aware of, is sticking their nose in is health care, and specifically Obamacare, which lays heavily on the minds of many Americans. Tell us how McConnell is handling Obamacare as a senator, and what would you do differently and why?
Well, it's funny. For many months, he said that he wanted to yank it out root and branch. That was his big thing. He ran all these ads and said that. But he no longer says that. He now wants to fix it and patch it. I disagree. I think it should be repealed in its entirety. And these people are constantly telling us it's the law of the land. Well, it's been so carved up, sliced up, that it no longer even closely approximates what it was when it was first passed. That said, it really, more than anything, is the flaw of the land. It's just so broken, so flawed, I don't think there's any capacity to fix or patch it, and I'm not for that. I think it should be repealed in its entirety. That's a big difference between Mitch McConnell and myself. He also voted, after saying he was opposed to it, voted to fund it and allowed this to become the quote-unquote law of the land. I would not have done that. I would have stood with Ted Cruz, Rand Paul, Mike Lee, and all the other true conservatives in the Senate who said we're not going to vote for the funding of this. Mitch McConnell says one thing in Kentucky and does something entirely different in Washington, D.C., and he's done it for years.
And moving on, I'm going through these the questions real quickly because I do have folks on the line who would definitely really enjoy speaking with you and may have some questions themselves, but I'd like to spend a little bit of time on education and energy. And last week we had a guest on to talk with us about Common Core. And the week before that we had a gentleman running for governor for the Green Party in Pennsylvania. What are your views on Common Core? What would you do? Would you do anything to get rid of it? And what energy, what are your thoughts on energy in America, moving forward with more renewable energy resources?
Well, you're just mixing all these things together on me, aren't you? As it relates to Common Core, I'm adamantly opposed to it. I think it's just flawed from any number of standpoints. Educationally, I think it's weak. I don't like the law. I mean, anybody who doesn't know anything about it should spend a little time looking at some of the lesson plans, and they would give anybody pause, even those who think this might be a good thing. So educationally, it's a joke. The idea that 3 times 4 can equal 11, as long as you can justify the reasoning for it and feel good about your answer, That's insane to me. I don't want somebody who comes up with 3 times 4 equals 11 designing a bridge that I'm going to drive across, or an elevator that I'm going to get into, or an airplane that I'm going to take off or land in. Facts are facts, numbers are numbers, and on any number of fronts, removing hard sciences and replacing them with these pseudoscience curriculum, and more critically, just turning our children into spies, basically, on their own selves and that, and on their families and homes. It is such an intrusion into the privacy of students and of their families. It's an encroachment on our Fourth Amendment rights, and I'm opposed to Common Core at many, many levels. I really am. With respect to energy policy, what was the question specifically?
Well, specifically, it's just what are your views on alternative energy, and what are your thoughts of America moving forward on renewable energy resources?
If it can cash flow itself, if it can sustain itself without subsidies from the American taxpayers, I say go for it. And if it can't, I say go for it with your own money, not taxpayer money. And if you want to lose that money because it's unsustainable, then that's your prerogative. But to use taxpayer money to subsidize something that has no ability to justify its own existence through supply and demand, I think that's a big mistake. We have the ability to be energy independent in North America and in the United States even specifically, with fracking, with the incredible coal resources, with the ability to tap into massive oil reserves as well on our own land. We have incredible opportunities to be independent of all outside energy sources. And if we can augment that and complement that with certain renewable resources that actually justify their own existence, terrific. Otherwise, I say let's stick to what actually doesn't need subsidization from the American taxpayer.
Okay, got it. Now, the people who listen to the show regularly know that, you know, I am a conservative, but I do consider myself an environmentalist as well. A green conservative, as Newt Gingrich coined the phrase, and green conservatism. So that's, you know, what I adhere to, so that's definitely interested and hear what your thoughts are on that. But I want to talk more about, of course, your campaign. And I've read that you've raised about $1.12 million. And
well, that was just in the last quarter.
Right.
Yeah.
In the last quarter. And some are saying that this will actually cause McConnell, as I heard today on the radio, to spend more dollars. Now, what they say is will be valuable to spend against the Democrats' opponent. How is your campaign doing, for one? And then how would you answer the critics when they say that you running and you causing him to spend so much money could hurt the Republicans in losing in the general election?
On the latter, he's the one that has no chance of winning a general election. And that's not just my opinion. All the polling shows that. He is neck and neck or losing to Grimes, who is remarkably unqualified, and yet he's neck and neck or losing to her in every one of the last 10 to 12 polls that have been done. He has no chance of winning the general election. And so if indeed he's worried about making sure we don't lose this seat, he should bow out now. So that's a joke. And if the man spent half as much time fighting against liberal policies in Washington as he spends fighting against conservatives in his own party, we wouldn't have the need to run against him. But the idea that he's forced to spend money to get reelected, well, welcome to the world of politics, Senator McConnell. I mean, for 30 years, the man has not had anybody so much as put an ad up on air against him in 30 years on the Republican side. So welcome to the world of competitive primaries. This is exactly what what America needs more of. It's cathartic. It's refreshing. It's invigorating for the political process to engage in active and aggressive discussions of issues. It's what he's afraid of. He can't defend his record. He's too cowardly to debate on his record. He's too cowardly to appear in public and discuss it with anybody in a public forum. Too arrogant to think that he needs to present himself to the people of Kentucky, and it's a shame because it's insulting. And so this idea that this is somehow hurting him, he's hurt himself. I didn't make him the least popular senator in America among his own constituents. He has a 32% approval rating among his own constituents. He did that quite handily on his own. So the idea that somehow me running against him is hurting him, he's hurt himself. I'm giving people an actual alternative, which is going to be critical if we truly want to keep this seat. And for those who'd like to keep this seat, they can go to my website, check it out. It's mattbevin.com, MattBevin.com. Check it out. See where I stand on these issues and all the others. And for those that are in Kentucky or who have friends in Kentucky, spread the word.
Yeah, definitely. And that's one of the things I wanted to make sure we got out today was the link to your website. And also, excuse me, you were recently at a rally, and we'll talk about it in Kentucky, in Louisville, that was sponsored by FreedomWorks and had support from, I heard about 1,000 or more, over 1,000 folks there, including Glenn Beck. And I heard McConnell also refused to have a debate with you. So I'll hear more about that.
Yeah, I mean, it's funny. I mean, it's probably McConnell who said it was 1,000. There was 3,500 seats, and I didn't see any of them that were empty. So there was probably about 3,500 people that were there physically, and then another 14,000 who streamed it online. And it was a tremendous group of folks. I mean, the energy, the passion, the excitement, it was awesome. It really was. And so it was very gracious of Glenn Beck and so many other terrific conservatives from around the country to gather together in support of this effort for FreedomWorks to have put this forward. All of this, I mean, these are the kind of things that are critical to gaining momentum for us going forward. And so I was grateful for that. The campaign is going outstanding. We have got tremendous grassroots support. Where we have difficulty is just the top down, because even for the dollars we raise, I don't think there's another Senate candidate in America running for U.S. Senate, not running against, and no one else who's running against an incumbent has raised more money than we have. But it's quickly dismissed and poo-pooed. You know, people are, you've only raised $2.5 million, and he's got $20 million. Well, he's been raising money since the last time he got elected, 6 years ago. So we're never going to compete on that. We've got the energy.
He has a machine too behind him. Mm-hmm.
Tell me that again. I'm sorry.
Oh, that's okay. No, I said I'm sure he has the establishment machine behind him as well.
He does. I mean, there's no question. I mean, he has all of the power of the party. But this is the problem, honestly. Those that think this is somehow, back to your earlier question, somehow a conflict within the Republican Party are not seeing what's going on. This is not just a battle for the heart and soul of the Republican Party. This, and I challenge your listeners to understand this, because it's important in this race, in other races like this, and it's important across the entire political landscape. And that is, this is a race that's a battle for the heart and soul of the entire political process. Because what's at stake in this race is whether we, the people, are still in charge, whether this is still a government of and by and for the people, or whether it's going to be allowed to be hijacked and is going to be of and by and for a few. The few, the establishment, the party, would have us believe it's the latter. I'm telling you, it is still our government. It is still we, the people. And I would be grateful for the support of any of your listeners that could come alongside social media. Follow us on Facebook. Follow us on Twitter. Push our stuff out there. Visit mattbevin.com. Find ways to support us in any way you can, because this affects all of America. It really does.
And certainly if you can topple McConnell, I think they'll just create ways throughout the country to people to support more grassroots, we the people candidates, more conservative candidates throughout the nation.
Absolutely. Yeah, it'll empower people. It'll invigorate people to the reality of what the ballot box can do. And the ballot box is a powerful, powerful privilege that we have as American citizens. There have been 1.5 million of our fellow citizens who have given their lives in uniform for us to be able to have the privilege of the ballot box. And I challenge your listeners, please, don't just listen, don't just talk, be engaged, be active, and don't just turn yourselves out. Turn out 1, 3, 5, 10, 50, 100 other people. Have a sense of urgency and a sense of purpose, because this is our government.
And before I turn it over to a brief word from our sponsor and then to the panelists and guests, audience, I'd like to get some about recent events over in Ukraine. Tell us a little bit about what your thoughts are on the situation developing with Russia. And what would you recommend Obama to do?
Well, I mean, for starters, I mean, we've gotten ourselves into a pickle where Russia knows they can do with impunity anything they want, because our foreign policy has been a joke from the beginning of this administration. It really has. It's been spineless. It's been apologetic. and it has given the impression that we're not serious about anything, and I am afraid that's become the reality. So with respect to Putin, I think it's a tremendous overreach, to say the very least. That's an understatement. For him to just take Crimea so that he has Gazprom's conduit into Europe, purely economic move. He's doing it with Russia's best interest at heart, but in absolute violation of the rule of law and the sovereignty of another nation. I think it's intolerable. I also believe, as a former military officer, I have pretty strong opinions about the way we do and don't use our military. We have absolutely no business being militarily involved in this business. We don't. And so at the same time, though, for us to turn the other way and pretend it's not happening is the wrong message. We have the ability to use an extraordinary amount of diplomatic and financial muscle. We have far less diplomatic muscle than we ever did, but we have the ability to use muscle that does still exist to make it clear that if you're going to act like a rogue nation, you're going to be treated like a rogue nation. And we should seize every dollar of every account belonging to Putin and all of his cronies that are parked in our banks and in the banks of our allies. We should remove him not only temporarily as a member of the G8, but we should actively work to ensure that Russia is removed as a member of the WTO and every other entity that gives them any semblance of legitimacy on the world stage. And if you want to act like a thug autocrat, we're going to treat you like one. We've got to be serious because he's serious. He's not goofing around, and he's assuming that we are. Our president needs to grow a spine for the last few years. I don't think he cares to, though. I don't think this bothers him a lick.
And this is definitely what happens, at least in my opinion, when America appears or America's weakened. And I certainly believe that that's something that Obama has done. And so we do definitely have some folks on here who would like to speak with you. But first, folks, May 11th is Mother's Day. So for all you men listening to the show, visit our sponsor for some great ideas for your special woman on Mother's Day. And so just give us a minute for a sponsor. Thank you.
Hi, I'm Julie Stevenson, an independent representative with Sopata Designs. Sopata is a direct selling company which offers fine sterling silver and semi-precious gemstone jewelry. If you like sterling silver jewelry, you can place an order with me. If you love sterling silver jewelry, book a home show and get the pieces you love for free. Sopata hostesses earn an average of $300 in free jewelry and 3 half-priced items. If you love our jewelry, do what I did and become a Sopata rep and earn 30% commission as well as free jewelry monthly. It's so simple. The style of our home parties is always an open house with no formal presentation. You can access my website on Bard's Logic, then call me to start living the life you deserve. 513-378-8876. I can't wait to hear from you.
Okay, folks, so we'll be putting the link of that shortly in the chat. So, guys, don't forget to visit the sponsor page on BardsLogicPoliticalTalk.com and get that special gift for Mother's Day. So we're back to the show, and I want to bring in Will at this time. He's been on the longest, and then I'll bring in some of the panelists. So, Will, thank you very much for coming to the show, and say hi to our guest tonight, Matt Bevin.
Hey, Matt Bevin, it's Will Stoff. I've been following you on Twitter since you announced your campaign a long time ago.
Sir, you have been
a
tweeting machine. Thank you.
No problem, man. You know, just watching your campaign, I don't think there's another campaign in the country that's taken on an incumbent that has this much enthusiasm, that has all the backing of every single possible conservative group that you could possibly think of in Kentucky and throughout the nation. And I think the biggest challenge, this is just kind of my own perception here, and maybe you can weigh in on this, is turning off the noise, whether that noise is coming from Mitch McConnell, whether it's coming from Allison Grimes, or I even hate to say it, coming from, you know, certain, I won't mention any names, but certain conservative media heads that do support you but are wringing their hands because we're in the final hour here, and they're worried about a bunch of stuff. They have no idea with what's going on as far as what's going on the ground. And I guess the biggest challenge, and maybe you can address this, is turning off the noise and winning this darn thing.
You know, it's a good point, and I think the key is people have got to stay focused on what the actual purpose is, and the purpose is to win this primary on May 20th. And the static that often accompanies these things is enough to test those of weaker will. It's interesting, you know, Thomas Paine once said, these are the times that try men's souls. And he then went on to say that the summer soldier and the sunshine patriot will shrink, you know, from in moments of crisis. And you're absolutely right. I hope there are not too many sunshine patriots that will fall back now, because these are the times that try our souls, but never has there been greater opportunity to do something great for the American political process, like reinvigorating a sense of confidence among we the people.
Absolutely. Absolutely. You know, and the thing is, Matt, if let's just say, and I hope this isn't the case, I don't think it's going to be the case, but if you don't win this thing, you know, John Boehner and Mitch McConnell are going to pass amnesty, and folks better wake up to that. Instead of choosing the lesser of two evils, it's time to wake up.
Well, he'll have to do it before November, because I'm telling you, Mitch McConnell has no chance of getting reelected in the general election. He really doesn't, and that's unfortunate. And then we'll just have one more rubber stamp vote for Harry Reid and Chuck Schumer and company, and they're huge proponents of amnesty as well. So, I mean, the sad thing is we have got to wake up. You're right. And if people who care about this, listeners in Kentucky, May 20th, you can go to the ballot box, bring people with you, turn out. And go to mattbevin.com to learn more. Spread the word, because that's how these races are won. You're absolutely right, Will.
Hey, thank you so much, Matt, and I'll continue tweeting out and supporting you, man, whatever I can do here in South Georgia.
Thank you, sir. I appreciate it.
And Will, what we do here on the show is, you know, you're welcome to stay on, and we'll have Will has dropped the call. If you're still listening out there, one thing we do a little differently than you may be used to on other talk shows is once someone calls in, we keep their mic open so they can join our roundtable discussion just in case they'd like to chime in at other parts of the show. So if you're welcome to call back at 347-945-7428, and anyone else you'd like to chime in tonight, give us a call here at 347-945-7428. And right now I'll be bringing in Dan Gray, which is one of our contributors here to Bard's Logic. So thank you very much, Dan, for calling into the show. How are you?
Great. And you know what? Listening to Mr. Bevin, sir, and I mean the word sir, I have the greatest respect for what you're saying, because it's what we've all been saying, and you're expressing yourself so excellently. Your understanding of the issues is as good as, boy, I can't even speak, and usually I'm fairly articulate. You're very articulate, especially in a plain, clear, logical, and forceful manner. The purpose and urgency that you're expressing, to use your own words, is something that I'm running across everywhere I run, which is Jersey, Pennsylvania, Maryland, West Virginia, New York. I'm a Pennsylvania guy, and I haven't made it as far as Kentucky, but here in Pennsylvania, the vast flyover space between the couple of major cities that we have, Philly and Pittsburgh, is lovingly referred to as Pennsyltucky. The only thing you don't have for Kentucky, and I'm kind of surprised you're doing so well there, is you don't have a Southern accent. But that's okay. It's refreshing that you're not adopting a fake accent for the audience like our certain occupant of 1600 Pennsylvania.
You know, it's interesting, though. Kentucky, we're an interesting state in that we have an amazing array of accents or lack thereof. And we're a state that is sort of right at the cusp. I mean, my office downtown Louisville, I look out the windows and I look across the river, and all I see is Indiana, and no one ever confuses that with the South. So we're right at the crossroads of the South and the Midwest, and we have wonderful blends of the two. But you're very gracious in your comments, and I appreciate that.
Well, it's because, like most of us, completely fed up. I'm frustrated. I've been saying this stuff for years, and this year, just recently, people have started to, as Will Stoff said, to wake up. They really are. Everywhere they turn, there's people coming out of the woodwork who are saying, what can I do? They're not just saying, boy, oh boy, this is a mess. They're saying, what can I do? And what we can do is get behind candidates, issues, and specific goals. And a specific goal is to elect people to Congress, to the Senate, to the presidency, to your local offices. And let's not forget, folks out there, that people like Mr. Bevin are rare. It's rare to get somebody who's ready to go on a national stage. Most of us need to start with school boards and local races where you can build some credibility and you can learn how things work, and so people can vet you. And I'm just so pleased to hear you. I usually get guests who I have some agreement with and some disagreement with, and we get into debates. Not only have I heard everything you've said, but I've been looking on your website now for some time, and I have yet to find anything that I'm not in 100% sync with. You really are resonating not with me personally alone, but with what I hear from, I guess since last September, I must have met, and I admit I'm one of those people who counts things, somewhere around 18,000 different patriots, and every one of them is saying the same thing you're saying, but not quite as clearly, and it's a pleasure to hear.
Well, thank you. You know what, I'll tell you what, I speak, as you said, for a whole lot of folks, and I'm grateful for, you know, we all end up as products of how we were raised and of the various variables that make up our lives, and it becomes a function of who among us will step forward. Winston Churchill once noted that history turns on moments like this, that the greatest moments, as you look back through the lens of history, were not necessarily so obvious at the time. And he said, shame on the man who finds himself at such a juncture, who is either unprepared or unwilling to take up the task. And I'll tell you, I've been arguably prepared, and I'm grateful, having some things that I've had control over and many that I didn't. But it then becomes a function of, am I willing? And it's the same for you and for any of your listeners as well, that who among us are willing to take up the task? Because our nation demands no less of us at this time. It's easy, if you're at all like me, I've always thought, hey, I hope somebody steps up. I hope somebody stands in the gap. I hope somebody comes forward. But sometimes we're the somebody. The somebody is always somebody, and why should it not be us at times? And so who among us will stand in the gap? We need citizen legislators of the ilk that our founding fathers were, people who will step forward for finite periods of time to come from their farms, to come from their businesses, to step forward as public servants, to serve their fellow citizen, and then return back to where it was that they came from, as true statesmen always did. This idea that we have a career path of career politicians is part of what is destroying the fabric of this nation. It just is.
I'd like to add to that. It's not just people who run for office. There's a lot of people out there who are not set up. They're not capable of running for office or serving in office, and that doesn't make them bad at all. I'm numerically challenged. I have to count things. I'm not a real excellent. I couldn't make a CPA. It doesn't matter. We need CPAs. Not in the IRS, of course. And we need people in every walk of life, every person out there. You may not have worked. You may be a kid who's just in school or just out of school and hard to find a job. You may have been out of the workforce for a while being a homemaker, which doesn't mean you've worked any less hard. You may have specific experience. You might be a welder. I run into people of all different backgrounds, and I look for what are they good at. What are they good at that they don't even know yet? And I ask them to step forward and do that. Anyone can knock on a door for a candidate or for an issue. Anyone can circulate a petition. My wife cooks, and she's not a political person. And when we have local meetings and she bakes cookies, well, you've been to, my God, how many of these meetings, sir? You go to these things, and after an hour, rear end is painful. And after 2 hours, your ears are bleeding. But if you have one of her cookies, you had a good experience and you're coming back. That may not sound like much, but every single thing that can be added is helpful. And it doesn't have to be straightforward politics. There are a lot of interest groups, and every single issue that we can attack the so-called progressives, they're not. They're not progressives. They're not liberals. I respect progressives and liberals for having a different viewpoint if they're honest. The people in charge, whether it's Millionaire Mitch or Allison Grimes or, you know, Republican and Democrat are labels that mean very little. It's
true.
Honest people who are willing to debate honestly and stay within the strictures of the Constitution that can solve all the problems of this country. And it won't come from Washington and the state capitals exclusively. So last weekend I met in a Pennsylvania militia summit, leaders of the militias across the state. And that's an important thing, which is to be prepared to assist in enforcing law, to insist lawmakers or law officers, that is, if they need our help and if they won't do their jobs or if they're the ones breaking the law, there needs to be someone to back up the law, which is the Constitution of your particular state and the United States. There are interest groups that I work with, like Americans for Prosperity, which are entirely economic and nonpartisan. And then there are interest groups that deal with issues that I don't even consider necessarily religious issues. You touched on your pro-life stance, and I share that with you. That is a constitutional issue. You're attacking a person without giving them due process and depriving them of life and liberty, and in a painful and cruel manner. It's the same thing when they go after people who are too old or too sick and say, I'm sorry, under Obamacare, those death panels that Sarah Palin talked about are now coming online. We're going to deny you coverage because it's just not worth it. You're not a productive enough member of society. According to whom? So, folks, if you are in Kentucky or if you have some big money or if you can help on social media, candidates like Matt Bevin are worth it, in my opinion. But if you don't have those particular characteristics or if you have something else in mind, don't let that stop you from getting involved. There is no unimportant issue right now. And speaking of which, I would like to ask you a question. I mentioned, sure, and I saw on one of your sites there, constitutional enumeration. Could you please explain to the audience what you would like to see in any sort of bill that the Senate has to consider once you get elected?
Well, you know, that's really, that phrase is often associated most specifically with the 10th Amendment, but it's one where, frankly, in my opinion, you know, constitutional enumeration is really a reference to the fact that if you are going to sponsor or co-sponsor or debate or vote on any piece of legislation, that you should clearly spell out what power in the Constitution has given authorization to that piece of legislation. Where is in the Constitution, where is the enumeration or the power given for that particular proposal? And so enumeration is, we often talk about which powers are enumerated to the federal government, which to the states. And the 10th Amendment makes clear those not clearly enumerated or spelled out to either are the responsibility of the states and of the people. And I believe in that. I firmly believe in that. And so if, in fact, there is no constitutional justification, then it should be the responsibility of the states and the people, period.
Thank you.
I want to bring in another caller. I want to bring in Joseph. And also, before I do that, I want to mention that we have here in the chat here from Liberty's Thunder, which is another radio show here on Blog Talk Radio, conservative radio show. So thank you very much, Liberty's Thunder. I believe that's Rex Christie, one of the hosts of the show, which I believe is on Sunday evenings, Easter, at, I believe, 9 or 10 o'clock Eastern time. So you can find that on Blog Talk Radio as well. And that show is Liberty Thunder. And thank you very much. I see you there in the chat. It's great to have you here. So
it's a great show.
I'm going to bring in Joseph. Thank you very much, Joseph, for coming to the show. And if anyone else would like to chime in, just call us at 347-945-7428. And I do see it. Someone else called in, and we'll be bringing you in from 502, and we'll be bringing you in after James. So go ahead, Joseph.
Well, thank you for having me on, Robert. First of all, Mr. Bevin, I want to commend you for the valiant campaign you're waging. I know many conservatives like me who have been following your campaign from the beginning can agree that you have fell to a barrage of negative and unfair attacks from the beginning from Mitch McConnell's campaign trying to define you instead of letting the truth get out there. And, the fact that various conservative outlets such as Freedom Works, the Senate Conservative Funds are backing you shows that you have great support and great respect amongst the conservative base, who do not associate themselves with the establishment GOP. My question to you is, if you had to sum it up, what would be a compelling, positive narrative of yourself? In contrast to Mitch McConnell, and why do you believe you should be the guy to replace Mitch McConnell?
I am a man who is raising a family in this environment. I'm the only one in this race on either side raising a family in this environment. I'm the only one on either side who has served our nation in uniform. And I'm the only one on either side who has ever created a job that the taxpayers haven't paid for. And while none of those things are unique, none of those things in combination are unique, but I'll tell you, they are remarkably unusual and rare among our elected officials in Washington. And if we don't start to elect men and women who understand from personal experience how the wealth of this nation is created, and I've employed even now dozens and dozens of people across the companies that I own, and through the years have created opportunities for hundreds of people. We have got to elect men and women who understand personally how this happens, or we will, as Margaret Thatcher noted, soon enough run out of other people's money, and then the gig is up.
I appreciate you answering that, because I think that's what a lot of voters want to hear. A lot of conservatives like me are appalled by the smear campaign that McConnell has been running against you from the beginning, kind of definitely taking a page out of Obama's playbook there.
It is. You know, it's funny. He told us that he was going to run a presidential-style campaign. Literally, that's what McConnell has said from the beginning. We are now understanding which president he was looking to emulate. You're absolutely right.
I definitely agree. Very hypocritical. Actually, there was a Tea Party spokesman by the name of Scott Hofstra who is also backing you. And quoted, a 30-year senator has to resort to negative attacks and slandering in order to try to win his race. And unfortunately, it works. And many people, I just want to say, respect you that from the beginning you tried to run a gentleman's campaign and you tried to stick to the facts. But unfortunately, Mitch McConnell has turned this into a smear campaign, because I agree with your opening statements at the beginning of the show. When you have a poor record to run on, what do? The only thing you can resort to is a smear campaign. But my only concern here is that several polls have McConnell up by double digits. Now, I'm very confident that polling is not exactly very accurate, because back in the 2012 elections, even a day prior to the presidential elections between Mitt Romney and President Obama, in the six battleground states, they had several polls with Romney in a dead heat or a point behind, and then on election day, he winds up losing by a landslide. But I definitely believe that if you can knock off Mitch McConnell, you will be able to reinvigorate the Tea Party.
Let me address that real quickly. I think you're right, but let me address these polls. When I began, I was 50-something percent behind in the polls. Then the next time they ran a poll, I was 40-something percent behind. Then he spent a few more million dollars, and I was 30-something percent behind. He spent another million or two, and I was 20-something percent behind. The last time a public poll was taken was in February. There were a couple of them, Rasmussen and Bluegrass poll, and both of them showed me down in the low to mid-20s. But that is less than half of where I was down just a few months before. So every time a poll has been taken, I've closed the gap. And interestingly, it was only then that he decided to declare victory. The irony is that no matter how much money he spends, every time a poll is taken, I have gained and he has lost. And another thing that people forget is that when Mitch McConnell ran for Senate 30 years ago, 3 months to go before the primary, with less than 3 months to go actually, he was more than 40% down in the polls. So polls really only matter on Election Day. That is, that more than anything is the poll that matters. We are doing unbelievably well among people on the ground, which is why I found out 2 weeks ago Mitch McConnell is apparently now calling people I went to high school with. He is a very nervous man. And so he knows he's not doing well, which is why he's still scratching for dirt anywhere he can hopefully find it. I wish him luck on that front. It's why he'll go back to making up more, because that's the only thing he's got.
Well, sure. I mean, definitely that's the only reason why he's focusing millions of dollars on negative ads against you, because he knows you've been a viable contender from the beginning. He knows you pose an existential threat to eliminating him. And believe me, I want to see you, like every conservative patriot, knock him out of the primary, so he doesn't even make it to the general election. And I believe if you do that, and I have every confidence that you can pull it off, Mr. Bevin, that you will reinvigorate the Tea Party, because right now many people are disillusioned with the Tea Party because we lost momentum after 2010. I believe, like many conservatives, after we won, we became too complacent and we lost that jive that we had. And in 2012, when the Tea Party tried to reemerge, we lost a lot of critical races. And so people, I believe, will begin to take the Tea Party more seriously if they can see that we can actually start winning key races. And I think that begins on May the 20th with you, Mr. Bevin. You knocking off Mitch McConnell not only is so crucial for the Tea Party and conservative movement, but it is also very symbolic, because I believe that it will give back and earn back people that trust that they need, that they can say we can not only support the Tea Party and true conservatives like you with words, but we can support them with actions and with money, back them up with actual funds. And I think many people are reluctant to go to that step of funding campaigns to the extent where they can be successful is because they haven't seen many positive results. And so I think you are the best chance out of the 8 primary races that are currently being run nationally against GOP incumbents. I believe, Mr. Bevin, you have the greatest chance, and I hope you just stay consistent as you've been doing, and if you can knock him off, I have every confidence that you can be that 1A player that can give the Tea Party that reemergence that they need, that fire in the belly, as Sarah Palin has been touting, has been lost. And I believe it begins on May the 20th. And Mr. Bevin, good luck, but great leaders like you, in my opinion, don't need any luck. That's more of a saying. I wish you.
Thank you.
You will do well.
Thank you very much. I appreciate it. And for your listeners, those tonight, again, go to my website, mattbevin.com. Get engaged. Help us. People can make calls from anywhere in the country into Republican primary voters here. We can hook people up with the ability to call, as the earlier speaker was noting. People can get engaged at any number of levels. And if people are here in Kentucky, they can walk, they can knock, they can talk to people. You can use social media. You can go online. You can post comments in comment sections and point people to our campaign. I'd be grateful. And there are other great campaigns around the country. There are the Milton Wolfs in Kansas and the Greg Brannons in North Carolina and the Chris McDaniels in Mississippi and the Sasses in Nebraska, et cetera, et cetera. There's a lot of good folks running for office that need help and support. So I'd be grateful, and I know they would as well.
Thank you, Mr. Bevin, for your time. I appreciate it.
Sure.
Well, definitely, folks, check out Mr. Bevin's website and give whatever support that you can, because as Joseph pointed out, it is a very important race in many ways, very symbolically and concretely. And at this time, I do want to bring in another one of our panelists, and that is James. Thank you very much, James, for coming to the show. How are you?
I'm doing great, Robert. How are you doing?
Oh, I'm doing really good. Very happy to have our guest on tonight, then the floor is yours, whichever you'd like to say or ask Mr. Bevin.
Well, I just real quick, I won't drag this part out, but just a little announcement. I won't be on your show on Wednesday next week, and I just want to let you know ahead of time. The reason being is I'm quite certain I will be exhausted from handing out articles of impeachment to Congress Tuesday and Wednesday. Now, if not, if I am on the road, I will go ahead and call in and give you an update as to how that went. But I will be leaving on Sunday morning, head to Washington, D.C., to meet up with a team of patriots from Operation American Spring and overpasses, and we will be walking through those six buildings and handing out 535 packets, and hopefully they'll get something started before May 16th when everybody shows up for American Spring. I just want to let everybody know that. And
I appreciate that. Yeah, can next week. And next week, James, speaking of James, we'll have another James on next week as our guest, and that is James Carr, who is running for Congress in Virginia. So, folks, look forward to that. Go ahead, James.
Well, just a couple of questions there, Matt. As far as, you know, you talked about the budget, or as far as our, you know, how we should, you know, spend our federal money responsibly, and everything you said was great. You know, we're currently $18 trillion and counting in debt. What would you do to try to rein in federal spending?
We need absolute cuts. And by absolute cuts, I mean, you've heard of any number of iterations of things like the penny plan. The penny plan is simply the idea of cutting an absolute 1% out of the federal budget on an annual basis. Not patting ourselves on the back for sequestration where we spend 4% more instead of 8% more and feel like we've accomplished something. The reality is we need to cut absolute spending. There's not one listener, not one person in America who in 2014 could not live off of 99 cents of what they lived off of in 2013. There's no way that anybody couldn't live on 1% less if they had to of necessity. And we should demand and expect no less of our federal government, which is broke. And in fact, now spending 40 cents of every dollar borrowed from future generations. It's irresponsible, and we need to start cutting across the board in an absolute fashion in order to rein this back in.
Well, that sounds very good. I mean, you know, we've got to do something to rein that in. As far as border security, I mean, obviously it's not a great big immediate issue in Kentucky, you know, but we do have an illegal alien problem all over America. What do you recommend we would do to that to fix that?
Well, I'll tell you, it's interesting. We may not be a border state, but we are one of the 50 states of these United States, and it is a problem for every state, as you know. And I'll tell you, we are – the reason people come here both legally and illegally is, above all, we are a nation of laws. And as a nation of laws, the last thing we should do is punt the first one for people upon their arrival. I think that's ridiculous. We shouldn't have, hey, don't worry, the first law's on us kind of attitude. We should enforce the borders. We should enforce the laws on the books and secure the border to the absolute degree possible, and we have the ability to do so. We are choosing intentionally not to do so, and I think it's a mistake. To reward illegal behavior is wrong at many levels. It sets a bad precedent both for those individuals, and it is an insult to those who have come here legally and have paid their dues to do things the right way. So that's my stance on that in a nutshell.
Well, so far we're batting 1,000. what do you support the impeachment of Barack Obama for the things he's done while in office?
Well, I'm running for U.S. Senate, and obviously as a senator that would not be my prerogative to initiate that. That's just initiated in the House. But certainly, if that came before me in the Senate, I would not be disappointed at the ability to weigh in on such a thing. And what I mean by that is I think there are any number of actions taken not only by this president and this administration as a whole that make things like Watergate seem like child's play by comparison. And I tell you, we need to start to take the oath of office of our congressman seriously. We just do. And so I think with respect to the initiation of this, of course, it would need to be initiated in the House, and it sounds like at least I don't know if it was you or a previous speaker that is looking to, I think it was you that were saying next week you're going to be trying to do something about that.
Yeah, that was me, and it does begin in the House, but you know, of course, the trial itself goes on in the Senate, and that's why I was curious with that.
Right.
You know, everybody in Congress is involved, and it's important. Yeah, it's important that we get people up there that understand the rule of law, and we've got a lawless president up there right now, so I'm glad to hear that. I've actually, just to let you know, I have actually passed your website onto my Kentucky group. I'm the founder of Overpass for America. I don't know if you've seen us out there, but we get out there.
Oh, of course, absolutely.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah, and you've got some strong people here in Kentucky. You really do. I've met a number of them.
Well, good, good. Well, I passed the word on to our administrator out there, and they're going to get a hold of your campaign headquarters. And if we could get some signs and banners and whatnot to carry out there on those overpasses to let people know, give you a little old-school stoving, we'd be real happy to do that for you.
I'd be grateful. We've done a lot of it, and the more the better, really and truly.
Well, definitely if we could get some contact, you know, at some point off the air, of course, unless there's a website or an email you'd like to give Matt for them to be able to contact you to be able to you guys to work together on that.
Yeah, if you just reach, literally anybody can reach us just through mattbevin.com, mattbevin.com. There's places where you can literally just click to connect with us directly. I would encourage you to do so, please, and we'll be happy to see what we can do to hook that up.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah, great.
And I actually, just to let you know, my Facebook page has got over almost 80,000 people on there, and I just put an ad on there for you to tell people to pitch Mitch and vote for you as well and to spread the word.
I appreciate it.
So hopefully that'll get around.
Thank you.
Also, I'd like to take this opportunity to welcome Peaches Duncan into the chat. It's a new name I see there in the chat, and I want to welcome you to the show. So I hope you're enjoying it. We'd like to see you in there on subsequent shows. But at this time, I do want to bring in one of our panelists, our conservative activist, Cindy Todd. So thank you very much, Cindy, for coming to the show. How are you?
Well, I'm doing great. And I welcome you, Matt. I'm so glad you're here, and I'm so glad that you have thrown your hat into the ring. We really need people like you, and I look around the nation at some of the people who are running this year especially against the establishment Republicans, and there are just some incredible candidates, but we have to get the word out and get people to understand the importance of sticking with our roots and sticking with our political philosophy of less government. I mean, the Reaganism. And I look at how in the Republican establishment, what their strategy has been, and you have to ask yourself, are they just that stupid? Or, to see how badly their strategy is failing, I mean, Mitch McConnell, if he wins this election, don't they understand that he's going to lose in the general election? Because you can't activate your base. But anyway, thank you, James. I'm glad that you're going to do so. I was hoping that you were going to change the focus a little bit, you know, close to the election. And because I know here in Daytona, we were going to be doing some political stuff on our, not just focusing on impeachment, but also focusing on some candidates too. So that's a good thing. That's one way to really get the word out. It's been a marvelous way to get word out. But what, Matt, I want to know what you want from us the most. What do you need? More money? Is that more important to you than boots on the ground, or, you know, equally both? What do you need us to do?
We need both, and it's sad but true. But we do need money, and then again, it can come from small places. But you all touch a lot of people, And a lot of people, times a little bit can go a long way. My support all comes from the little people. I don't get the big PACs and lobbyists maxing out to me, and that's okay. But I'll tell you something. We need that because this will help us to fuel the airwaves, which is what we need to do to get out there to be known. But we do need boots on the ground for people who can physically come, for people that can make calls, for people that can blog, for people that can hit comment sections after articles are written and just point people to MattBevin.com, to point people to this campaign. We need any kind of the grassroots innovation that any and all of you have used in the past, whether it's sign waving on overpasses or people making phone calls into Kentucky from their own living rooms. We need all the above. We really do. And I'd be grateful for anybody that could help on these.
What has your, you know, I'm here in Florida, so we don't get your ads here. What are you putting on your ads? What message are you getting out? Are you using Mitch McConnell's record?
Yes. I mean, we're drawing a clear distinction between he and I on some things we talked about at the front set of this call, and differences between him and me, he and I, as it relates to Obamacare, for example, as it relates to the debt ceiling, as it relates to the cronyism that exists between he and the big business, big labor, and he as a part of big government, and myself, with respect to the Constitution, not sometimes, not when it's convenient or not bits and pieces, but all of it all the time. These are the types of issues. They're issues. We're talking about things of substance. He wants to go personal. He wants to be negative. He wants to make it like a mudslinging contest. But I know this. If you climb in the trough with a pig, you both get muddy, and the pig likes it. And so I'm not going to play that game. To me, this isn't an eighth-grade popularity contest. We're running for U.S. Senate. He refuses to debate because he's a coward and because he can't defend his record. And it's shameful that the people of Kentucky are being treated like fools by somebody who we've been paying for 30 years. It's a shame. I don't go there in my advertising. My advertising is specific to issues in his track record that people should be aware of, and specifically things that I am a proponent of, as in a constitutionally limited government, a balanced budget amendment, less, you know, taxation, less regulation, more individual liberties, not an encroachment of our Fourth Amendment rights through the NDAA and the Patriot Act, things of this sort. These are the things that I'm talking about every day on the campaign trail and in my advertising.
That's a very important attitude, and I'm really happy to hear you say that, because after you win this, and notice I said after you win this, you will, after you win the nomination, you're going to need the help of a lot of Republicans who had supported Mitch McConnell, and as long as you haven't burned any bridges, then, you know, you have that support right there ready
for
you.
No, and to me, it's a sad approach to take. Is I don't need to slander or burn other people in order to make myself look good. I really don't. I don't need or want this job badly enough to mislead people about what I believe, or to try to personally slander other people. That's just that's what's wrong with politics.
And I think that's one of the key mistakes the Republican establishment is making all across the country, is antagonizing Christians, antagonizing patriots, antagonizing Tea Party members, and then when it comes time for them to need their vote, they don't have it, and they either stay home or they just don't vote. Now, Harry Reid has changed rules of the Senate. He has changed the way they do certain things. He's basically taken away
the ability to vote for cloture. It's specific. What he's done is he's overturned 235 years of precedent, precluded without 60 votes the ability to jam certain nominations through the Senate, and that's what he has overturned, and Mitch McConnell has given him carte blanche to do that without any real effort to the contrary, and shame on him for doing it. Shame on him, on Harry Reid for attempting it, and shame on Mitch McConnell for doing it. And it's most specifically related to judicial nominees, and specifically so that Democrats could pack the D.C. Court of Appeals. That really was the real impetus behind this.
Right. Well, I know that people are going to say, well, but if you get rid of Mitch McConnell, then we've lost a lot of power. He had a lot of power in the Senate. And if we win the majority in the Senate and then we don't have Mitch McConnell with his power to back it up, we won't be able to get as much done. What do you say to that?
Well, I say, indeed, to the extent that that power exists, what has it been used for? It has been used to threaten conservatives, to promise to punch them in the nose and to crush them. It has been used to break the back of any effort by Ted Cruz and Mike Lee for fiscal responsibility and to vote for cloture to ensure that a clean debt ceiling bill with no cuts was given to the president. It's been used to appoint Marco Rubio to the Gang of Eight to sell this to conservatives. It's been used to vote for the funding of Obamacare and to ensure that that piece of flawed legislation was jammed down the American people's throats. This power and influence, to the extent that it actually exists, has been used over and over and over again to do things that undermine everything that conservatism is about. And so, frankly, we don't need more of this power and influence, if indeed that's what that is. I would love to see anything even closely approximating the level of energy that he has applied to crush and make light of the efforts of patriots to fight anything that the Obama administration or Harry Reid have put forward. He doesn't put a fraction of the energy into that. The man is a naked emperor, is what he is.
That's exactly what I was hoping you would say.
Very good way of putting it. But at this time, I'm going to go ahead and bring it back to Dan. And before we do that, anyone who is listening, you know, you're welcome to chime in and become a part of our roundtable discussion by calling us at 347-945-7428. I did see someone out there who was also in the 502 area that called in, and it looks like they either got disconnected or hung up. So you're welcome to call back again and join us at 347-945-7428. Thank you very much, Dan. I don't know exactly how much time that you'll be able to give us tonight, Matt. So, you know, whatever time, of course, you're able to spend with us, we really appreciate it. But, you know, this is, you know, part of the time where we do what we call a roundtable discussion after, like, the interview and question portion. So we really appreciate the time you spend with us tonight.
You're very welcome. I was supposed to be with you till 10:30, but I'm driving, so it turned out to be good. I was parked for a while. And then I just figured I'd head on down the road and hopefully not lose the signal. So I'm delighted to have been with you this time.
Okay, great. So if you have to go, then is there any parting things? Or if you could spend some more time, it's up to you, of course. So Mike, sure.
I can stay with you for about another 5 minutes or so, if that works, if somebody wants to call in, or if you have other questions, I'd be happy to address them.
I have one question real quick, Robert, and I'll just ask it and stop. If every time Mitch McConnell spends money, you gain in the polls, what do we have to do to get him to spend more money?
Well, I mean, obviously, there's I've heard he's about to do a big buy right now. But, of course, you know, it really has helped in some measure, but at the same time, it's because he is so unpopular. He really, the more people are aware of an alternative, the more they're willing to throw him out. They want out of the pan. They just want to make sure they're not jumping into the fire. That's where we do need support. For people that can contribute, I would be grateful, because financially we need to be able to put our message out there as well, not just our name as a result of being on the receiving end of his noise.
You know, Mr. Bevin, what Joseph was saying about the polls and what you've mentioned about the polls is telling. However, we should take a page from Organizing for America, Obama's group, because what they did, if you look at it on a nonpartisan basis, it was extremely effective. The bottom line is getting out the vote. whether it's money spent on advertising, bringing up people's awareness, or simply neighbors making absolutely certain that their neighbors and their friends and their coworkers and everybody who's entitled to vote in that area actually makes it to the polls and actually goes in that booth and actually casts a vote. That's what wins, bottom line. And this is a primary, folks.
Exactly.
Even with great weather, even with nothing else going on, the turnout is always low in a primary because most Americans are not awake yet. If you're awake and you're energized and you can bring some people with you, believe me, you can make a difference. We've been having votes that have hinged on a very, very few. In fact, I've mentioned this before. In my township, we defeated the broken windows theory that Agenda 21 Lite by one vote, one vote. And I hope we don't have you winning by just one vote, Mr. Bevin, because I don't want to see a recount. I'd like to see you win hands down.
Yeah, that'd be terrible. And I know we only have a few minutes left before he's got to go, and I do want to bring in somebody just called who's I know near and dear to many of our hearts, and that's Harriet. Thank you very much, Harriet,
awesome.
For coming to the show. How are you?
Yes, hi. Mr. Bevin, I am really, really, really enthused with you, and I support you 100%. I'm from Florida, but I'm going to be making calls to Kentucky. The reason
Thank
I'm
you.
Calling, you welcome. The NRA is now endorsed McConnell. We know that there are fake Tea Party candidates if you just look at the Virginia government race. We Republicans need to stick together. The Democrats are currently funding Tea Party fakes in order to please the Democrat gun grabbers and baby killers in office to rape and rob America further. What do you say on that behalf?
The NRA has endorsed him, but the NRA typically does endorse the incumbents. It's become somewhat political, which is the nature of large organizations domiciled in Washington, D.C., and that's the nature of such things. The gun owners of America have endorsed me. I have their support. I have the support of many members of the NRA. I was at a gun show in Kentucky this past weekend where there were thousands and thousands of participants, and they cleaned out every sign and piece of material we have, literally. So the real gun owners and supporters are supporting my candidacy, and I'm grateful for that.
Okay. I'm happy to hear that, and I will pass that message on.
And with that, folks, I want to go ahead and bring it to you, Mr. Bevin. Thank you very much for spending all the time you did with us on the show and coming on. And we wish you the best of luck. And I would like to give the last, of course, moments you're here with anything you'd like to have any parting words.
Well, I mean, are you giving that to me? I'm sorry, Robert.
Yes, that's to you, Matt.
Oh, yeah, no, I appreciate it.
About five
no.
more minutes, so I want to give you anything you want to get out before you have to go.
Yeah, no, all I would say is, again, please be as engaged as you are to the points that were noted. Turn people out with you. This is our government. Do not allow people who do not have the best interest of ourselves, our children, our liberties, and our nation to hijack this political process. You are correct. The point that was made with respect to low turnout among primary voters, they do tend to be low turnouts, which is our opportunity. Exercise our voice, get to the polls, and be heard. This is our time. This is our race. We can win this. We will win this if those who think as we think, and we are many, actually turn us to vote. So I would encourage people, again, I don't mean to beat it to death, but if you want to help in this race, go to mattbevin.com and get engaged. But do me a favor and plug that everywhere you can, on every website, in every Facebook posting, on Twitter. Push this race out there. We have got to light a fire. The election is 5 weeks from now. 5 weeks from yesterday is when this election is. I need help. Push it out there, and if people can contribute financially, I'd be grateful. I really would. You can do that on our website as well.
Well, now, one of the things groups we belong to here on Bard's Logic Political Talk is the Patriot Journalist Network, and I'd say check it out by going to www.patriotjournalist.com, and there are things that they do, you know, or we do rather, which like Twitter bombs for candidates, things like that. We did that for a Greenwald Peter Greenwald when he was running for his campaign, for his primary. So that might be something you might want to check out and see if I can contact the founder of that, Mark Prasik, and see if there's any way we can use those resources to help out your campaign. So that, folks, and for him is at www.patriotjournalist.com.
Whoops, I lost you there for a second, but yeah, I mean, those are the kind of things that are, those things are very powerful, and to the extent that people can help us with that, I would be grateful.
Great. Well, I'll give Mark a call. We'll definitely discuss that, and then what we'll do is we'll contact you through your page and try to make something happen through there.
That'd be outstanding. This is how these races are won. This is how we, the people, exercise our constitutional rights. And I'll tell you, I applaud all of you. Thank you for having me on. Thank you for your attention to this race and to the cause of liberty. I'm grateful. Thank you so much.
You are.
Well, thank you very much, and you take care, and good luck with your campaign, and hope to talk to Senator Bevin in the near future.
Thank you. Look forward to it. Take care.
You too. Take care.
Thank you.
Thanks. I'll tell you what, Bob, this guy, he's the real deal. And by the way, just a little bit of business for you, Bob. I would suggest that you invite Mitch McConnell on your show and see if he's got the guts to face us fairly, because everyone knows they're going to get treated fairly on this show. We've had people that we don't necessarily agree with or that we don't agree with each other, and there's always polite discourse. And so McConnell would be welcome, don't you think, Bob?
Oh, yeah, we definitely welcome and have him on the show. And, of course, treat him respectfully. And I'd give him questions. And I know you guys would give him questions. That would be fair. And, it'd be great to have him on and compare what he has to say and compare with Mr. Bevin.
Well, I'll tell you what, Bob. I would suggest that you actually invite him. And then if he comes on, I don't want to compare him with Mr. Bevin. I want to compare what he says with his record. And if he doesn't come on, I think we should mention in specific how he was invited and how he declined. And if he ignores you, he's a fool, and I'll tell you why. You have a listenership that candidates like Mr. Bevin are desperate for attention, of course, or Bob Guzzardi or any number of other Patriot candidates who start off as dark horses who are trying to get somewhere. On the other hand, they don't come on shows like yours unless they know that there are influential listeners, people who pay attention and people who get on their hind legs and do things. Some people listening to your show have money. Some people who listen to your show, a lot of us, don't have any money. But we're doing things. Speaking of which, just before I pass it on, because I've got more stuff when I get my turn, but Bob Guzzardi's petition for being on the ballot against Governor Corbett, the Republican in name only incumbent here in Pennsylvania, was challenged by friends of Mr. Corbett, and a judge just upheld Bob Guzzardi's right to be a choice for the voters.
Awesome.
In the Republican primary in Pennsylvania, there will actually be a choice between two candidates, which is a pleasure.
That's great news. Thank you very much for the update. Well, then we'll turn it over to Joseph in our roundtable discussion. Thank you very much, Joseph. The floor is yours.
Thank you very much. Once again, I think Matt Bevin is a excellent candidate. He's very articulate, and I think like I was stating before, this is a crucial, pivotal race. And for someone like me who has been part of the political process for a long time and who has worked in various campaigns, I want to emphasize I heard a lot of positive feedback from different Tea Party patriots and conservatives of how they can help Matt Bevin's campaigns and the other eight conservatives that are running in primaries. But I just want to emphasize the most important help that these candidates need to have a winning chance is finances. They need funds. And I commend everyone who's offered different options of helping out Matt Bevin's campaign, for example, with yard signs and grassroots. And that's very crucial, and that's great that they're offering to do that. But the problem is money is going to be the key factor. And Mitch McConnell has already invested early in the ground game infrastructure in this campaign. He's already launching commercials as of last month. In order for Matt Bevin to counteract this, he needs as many funds to counteract the smear campaign that's being run by Mitch McConnell. And I have every faith and confidence that if Matt Bevin is able to win on May the 20th, then the Tea Party Express, I hope, will come and endorse Matt Bevin and other Tea Party affiliates and come together to give these candidates a fighting chance. You see, the issue is a lot of these candidates, they're not losing for lack of because they don't have a high likability factor. They're not losing because people don't view them as viable candidates. They're losing because they don't have a fighting chance to begin with if they don't have the necessary funds to start out and wage a viable campaign. And that's what I want to emphasize to all the listeners who are out there. Even if it's $10, even if it's $20, believe me, $20 from 10,000, 20,000, 30,000 people, it adds up. And that will be the definitive factor. A candidate, in my opinion, who will ultimately prevail, and also in all the other 8 primary races, is the one who will be able to garner the most funds. And that is the only way that they have a fighting chance to win, the only realistic way. And that's what I want to emphasize and urge, that's very, very important, is to not only endorse the candidate with words, but endorse them with the most important stamp, with the funds that they need. Because without the funds, they're basically helpless. Even though they can, in order to have volunteer staffers, in order to produce signs, in order to go door to door, they need funds. It all functions on funds. They need it. And he has a month to go, and early voting has already begun in Kentucky. And I believe if Matt Bevin is able to garner enough funds to counteract Mitch McConnell, he can win. And that will be the definitive factor.
You know, Joseph, you're absolutely right. When people talk about money being a corrupting influence, it's not true. In fact, those who quote the Bible often quote it wrong and say money's the root of all evil. It's the love of money that's the root of all evil, when you love it to the exclusion of all other things. But it's just a medium of exchange. People who say there's too much money in politics, if you want to run for president of the United States, you'll need about $1 billion now. But America spends $8 billion a year, every single year, on shoes. Look it up, shoes. If every single person in this country decided that they wanted to do something, and if the half the country that has been voting more conservative gave $1, that's $150 million. That's all it costs you, folks. Even if you're really destitute, you can come up with $1 or with $5 or with $10.
Agreed.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. Think about what Mr. Bevin was saying about the cronyism and elitism in Congress and everywhere else. It's not just Congress. It's not just Republicans and Democrats. It's not just unions. It's every single institution, even the unelected ones. You look at all the different organizations that we all belong to, whether it's a church or a volunteer organization or a civic organization, and they've been corrupted because our society has gotten away from the core values that are embodied in our Constitution. The Congress, the Senate, the courts, the presidency, filled with corruptocrats, they stick together. They do. They work very hard to keep on message and to pool their money and to help each other out, but they're only doing it for what they want. We have to stick together for what we need. And there are folks out there, and we had a show on this some time ago, a month or month and a half ago, about unity. Here in Pennsylvania, I'm seeing in a lot of local races normal fracturing into factions. Now, if it's on the side of those people who want bigger government and more taxes and more intrusion, I'm happy to see it. Confusion to our enemies, the British Navy used to toast each other with. But on our side, we cannot afford this. If you have two, three, four patriots who are running for a particular office in this primary season, you can support the one you want, but don't knock the ones that you don't want unless there's a specific bad thing that they've done. If they are in favor of the Constitution and fiscal common sense and they happen to win, it won't be a harm to you, even if you may disagree with them on specific issues, and you'll have the opportunity to try and convince them. But if we degrade into name-calling or hurt feelings and all the rest of that stuff, it's only going to serve our enemies. And our enemies are not the Democrats. Our enemies are not the Republicans in name only. Our enemies use these titles. They call themselves things. They hijack the language. But what they are is people who want power. That's their sole motivator. Why, you have to ask yourself, after decade after decade after decade in Washington, would a fellow like Mitch McConnell want to stay there? It's a nasty place. Why would he want to stay there when he's not getting anything done? He's passing no agendas. He's not stopping the other agenda, at least the agenda that he says he's for and then votes against. So why would he want to stay? Why do all of them want to stay? What corrupts the few that get in there that we see turn from what they said? It's power. They want the perquisites. They like the fact that they can tell you what to do, but it doesn't apply to them. You have to go on Obamacare. You have to pay a fortune for worse insurance if you can get it at all. You have to get a permit to carry a gun. There's no other right that needs a permit. You have to go to a free speech zone. When we have these conventions coming up 2 years from now for the presidential race, they're going to have big conventions. Are we going to have free speech zones 5-6 blocks away with chain link fences and barbed wire pointing inward and armed guards with MRAP tanks, you know, parked right outside? Is that what free speech is? They tried to do a free speech zone out in Bundyville. By the way, before I pass the mic over, a quick update. When you're on Facebook or the news or any sort of internet source, you're going to see a lot of stories about Bunkerville, which is out in Nevada. That's where the Bundy Ranch is. Most of this stuff is not true. Do not share this information if you cannot vet the information. It does not serve the cause to have people get scared or angry to the point of action when they don't know what's actually happening. There have been so many false news reports. Now, I was at a militia summit, as I mentioned earlier.
Real quick, Dan, I do want to bring it back, but I just heard from James, and he's got a
I'll put him on.
So I want to be able to give him some parting words before he's got to go, and then we'll bring it back. And then we'll bring it back to you, Cindy. So go ahead, James.
Hi, James.
Oh, I thought you said Dave.
There you go.
Okay. Actually, real quick, I would like to touch on what Dan was just talking about. I made quite a few enemies with the tinfoil hat crowd over the Bundy Ranch thing because there was so much bogus information going out about that. And I just have to tell people that, you know, if somebody says that they see, you know, troops massing and things like that, DHS and ATF and whatnot like that, well, there's very few people in this country that don't have a smartphone. So if somebody is saying, well, I have an eyewitness there, well, okay, well, they're the only guy in the country that doesn't have a phone with a camera on it. And, you know, that sounds very, very unlikely, especially if you've got these people out there supposedly looking for things like that. So somebody says, well, I can see them. Okay, well, show me some proof. And, you know, and the other thing is the Bundys actually have, and give me just a moment and I will pull this information up for everybody, where you can sign up for updates from them directly via text messages and emails, and it comes directly from them. And that the address is just bit.do/Bundy. That's bit.do/Bundy. and no www, just bit.go/Bundy, and you can sign up for updates directly from the source. And
somebody type that into the chat.
Okay, excellent, excellent. Thank you. And
no, I'm asking someone to type it into the chat.
Okay. I'm sorry. I thought you said that somebody
I
had
can't
put
get
it into the chat.
What is it again? www.
No W.
No,
just B-I-T.
No W. Just B-I-T dot D-O slash Bundy. And you'll hear everything going on directly from the Bundys. And I've already signed up for it myself. It is legit. And I get, you know how much information I've gotten from them? None, which tells me things are very calm out there. And all of these people that are spreading these conspiracy theory around, they're one of two types of people. They're either a grandstander trying to get their 15 minutes of fame based on lies, or it's an intentional government misinformation operation.
James, there are other people who do this because everyone likes to gossip. And there are a lot of alarmist people, and quite frankly, there's a lot to be alarmed about. When we were having this summit this weekend, one of our top guys, we were a whole bunch of different militias from across the state, and the one guy who was supposed to chair the meeting because he shares the respect of all of us. He's a very, very stable, knowledgeable, organized, down-to-earth guy. He was out in Bundyville, one of our guys, with several other of our fellas. And he was reporting live, and as we were finishing our organizing meeting, he's on the line with us telling us that the federal government just stood down. Now, I don't know if they're going to come back or if they're going to do more. They still have a presence. This is what the militia is supposed to do, is uphold law. I don't want to see us doing anyone doing anything precipitate. I know you're frustrated, but you don't shoot first. You don't cause problems. What you do is prepare for the worst and hope for the best. And quite frankly, if we do our jobs, if we hold on to our weapons and don't get disarmed, if we do as Joseph suggests and give a little bit, whatever we can afford, and if we put boots on the ground in peaceful ways, that's getting out the vote, that's knocking on doors, that's getting people to the polls, and that's Operation American Spring, which is the big one that's coming up this spring that I'll be at with James. And James, are we supposed to deliver these petitions next week? I thought it was a little bit further. It's Tuesday into Wednesday we're doing this?
It is next Tuesday into Wednesday, the 22nd and 23rd. And that's for the petition. That's for the articles of impeachment. The reason for that, it's kind of like the metaphorical, you know, shot across the bow to give them the opportunity to do what they know they need to do, at least constitutionally and legally, and then we'll arrive, you know, 2 weeks later or 3 weeks later, and they'll have had 3 weeks to mull over what they need to do, and they'll know exactly what the demands are.
Well, that gives me a couple of days to try and clear my schedule. I was not clear on the exact date, but folks, when we're talking about somebody running for Senate in another state and you wonder, well, that's their senator and what's it matter? Remember, there's only 100 senators, two from every state, and or I'm sorry, 57 states. There's a joke for you. But it's not a joke. And it doesn't do any good, by the way, if we do impeach right now. We might just have the votes right now in the House of Representatives, but it won't do any good if Harry Reid controls the Senate. If they can stifle it right there, that's like a grand jury indicts a criminal with proof, and it goes to court, and the jury are all bought and sold or intimidated. We need people in the jury, and that's the Senate. The Senate is the one where that's where the trial takes place in the impeachment of any federal official. And quite frankly, I do not want to see these people strung up from the gallows, but I would not mind seeing them get a fair trial, having all the facts aired, and provided that proof can be presented to the American public, and it can. I saw the Watergate hearings when I was a young man. I watched them gavel to gavel. Well, we could do that again. I want to see what comes out. I have a suspicion as to what will come out, but I want to see it, and I want to see evidence, and I want to see them do the perp walk if they're convicted. Because, by the way, folks, once somebody is convicted in the Senate and impeached, and that includes judges and other federal officials, they can be impeached as well, then they become liable for civil and criminal action. While they're in government, you always wonder why these people get away with this. Because if it's not an egregious criminal offense and they're not high enough up, you know, because high ranking, nothing ever happens to them, why could they get away with Waco and Ruby Ridge? Why do they get away with taking away Elian Gonzalez? All these years, they keep getting away with it and getting promotions. It's because there isn't the sufficient number of votes to impeach them and convict them. Mr. Bevin, I am convinced, would give a fair trial and a fair hearing to any accused official of the government. And that's important because we can't have unfair trials for anyone. And I am also convinced that if the evidence was presented that dealt with President Obama or any other federal official who had abrogated their oath to uphold the Constitution, he would not shirk from his duty to convict that person and toss them out of office. And I'll tell you, any way we can do it, short of violence, is worth it. And the best way to toss them out of office is to not let them get in the first place. So if you've got your own Mitch McConnells, if you've got your own Harry Reid's, if you've got your own, I've got Cartwright here in my district. He's my congressman. Oh, my God. But if you've got these people, then you've got to find suitable challengers and support them, even if they're not ideally just what you want and agree with. Because if you can get that challenger on the ballot, if you can knock them out in the primary or the general election, guess what? You've got a whole new ball game because now you've got somebody in office who will do their job, and you have to watch them like hawks too.
And James, I'd like to – James had to go, so thank you, James, for coming on to the show tonight. And I'm going to bring the mic over to Cindy, but before I do so, I want us to, again, get a word from our sponsor. And, of course, gentlemen, May 11th is Mother's Day. And for all you guys out there listening to the show, whether it's here live or on the archives, visit our sponsor for some great gift ideas for the special woman on Mother's Day. And so let's hear from our sponsor.
Hi, I'm Julie Stevenson, an independent representative with Sopata Designs. Sopata is a direct selling company which offers fine sterling silver and semi-precious gemstone jewelry. If you like sterling silver jewelry, you can place an order with me. If you love sterling silver jewelry, book a home show and get the pieces you love for free. Sopata hostesses earn an average of $300 in free jewelry and 3 half-priced items. If you love our jewelry, do what I did and become a Sopata rep and earn 30% commission as well as free jewelry monthly. It's so simple. The style of our home parties is always an open house with no formal presentation. You can access my website on Bard's Logic, then call me to start living the life you deserve. 513-378-8876. I can't wait to hear from you.
You know, Bob, guys like jewelry, too.
Well, you know what? I love jewelry, actually. I like rings and I like necklaces. But unfortunately, they pretty much concentrate on ladies' jewelry. So definitely check it out by going to the new page that you'll find on Bard's Logic, and that's going to www.bardslogicpoliticaltalk.com and check out our sponsor page, and then it will have a link where you can go and check out some of the gift ideas that you can get for Mother's Day. So ladies and gentlemen, definitely check out our sponsor. Thank you very much. And with that, and I agree. I mean, I really, as I said, Dan, I really like jewelry as well. I wish they would have had more. I tell people, just as a joke, if there's anything that would make me want to be a woman, it's jewelry. But that being said,
yeah,
I'll bring it over to you, Cindy.
Not childbirth, though, right?
No, gosh, no. But if I tell you what, you know, me and my wife are trying to have a baby, and if I could do it, I would, just so we can have it. So go ahead, Cindy.
Okay, so Robert, that was a funny statement there. Okay, I'll remember that.
Well, visit our sponsor, Cindy, and you'll see some of the, they got some really neat stuff. I got four what was it? I got my wife some earrings. I guess, it was for Valentine's Day. That's it. I got my wife some earrings for Valentine's Day from there. So we got some really, really nice stuff. And Julie, I know her. She's a very nice lady. So check it out.
Well, I actually like silver jewelry, but right now I just don't have the money to buy any jewelry.
That's why you have your husband go to the page, and then he can get it.
Yeah, right. Yeah.
Oh, they're reasonably priced, you know. So yeah, check them out.
Well, I had
some more expensive pieces to get.
I had a comment for Dan back when he last spoke. He made a comment, and now I can't remember what it was. I was unable to write a note or anything, and so it's gone out of my 57-year-old brain. But anyway, what I was thinking was, I think what we should do is do, I think that Matt Bevin is one of the most important races that we have going on across the country right now. I mean, there's a lot of important ones. But this one, I think, is extremely important because this is direct battle. This is hand-to-hand combat with the Republican establishment. And if we don't win it, or at least get really close, they're just going to keep ramming their fist down our throat every single election year. So I was thinking, why don't we put a priority on Matt Bevin and do a Matt Bevin money bomb sometime on a Friday night?
Okay.
I'll pledge some money myself, and we can just here's what you do. Okay. If you can match my amount, I'm going to give 50. If you can match my amount, do it. If you can match half of what I give, great, do it. If you can give 15, if you can give 10, do it. If you can't do any of that, I want you to go into every crevice, every pocket in your car. Come up with whatever money you can find. Go through every coat pocket, every pants pocket, every place in your house that you can think of that you have ever had any money at. Go look for your loose change anywhere, your cup holder, whatever. The bottom of your purse. Go rob your change bank. You know, everybody has a little change things sitting on their counter somewhere, and they throw their change in it, right? Go rob that. Go take that money, take it to the bank, deposit it, and write a check for the amount. Even if you only find $2, just go do it. Now, I don't know how many people, you know, we can get on the show. I don't know how many people we can get, you know, to call, to listen to it in the archives or whatever. But I think that if we send, I mean, James with all his people, if he put it a priority, Dan and his people, if he made that a priority, if we got Chris on it, if we got Rex on it, I think that we could really, you know, come up with a nice healthy sum for him. Then if we could get other, you know, tell our story to other blog talks, other conservative blog talks, other conservative pages, asking them to do the same thing. You know, we might be able to help him out quite a bit. But, you know, people sit in front of their televisions and they watch TV like stone people. I mean, they don't even... There's no, I don't know. They waste so much time. I'm one of them. I'll sit and watch a movie, you know, and just waste 2 hours, you know. if we can get a commercial in front of them that gives them some information that they really need before they go into the voting booth, I think that'll help out a lot. And, you know, I'm sure he's doing mail-outs. Nail outs are less expensive than television. So, you know, if we can fund one of his mail outs, that's awesome. And I think we really could do that if we made an effort at it. And, you know, we've had a lot of really good candidates on here, Robert. You've done such an incredible job getting these guys out there. But I think that this is one of the most important.
Oh, thank you, Cindy. It's definitely, you know, a team effort. You know, we've had, you know, Danny's brought some folks on, and I know you've brought some folks on, other people. You know, James has brought folks on, Kelly. So it's definitely a team effort. I appreciate everything that you guys do to contribute to the show, and, of course, the audience as well, you know, people who, you know, ask to have different folks or different topics on. And, you know, we just, you know, are able to bring them on. I think, like tonight, I really appreciate it. And then we're going to bring Joseph in real quick after I make these comments. Is that, you know, I really appreciate, you know, the times where the candidates do come on or the guests, you know, such as the ones we had a couple weeks ago on Common Core. We're spending more, you know, more time than they first allotted. As Matt Bevin said, he was originally going to just stay on for a half an hour, and he ended up staying on twice that amount.
They get to say what they want, and they get good positive feedback. It's a good feeling for them to be on. That's why they stay.
Well, that's good. I'm glad we could be welcoming to them. And as Dan pointed out, even if we don't, you know, agree with them 100% or on a lot of things, like a couple of our guests. But I do want to bring it over to Joseph because I know, Joseph, you've got to go as well, and I appreciate you letting me know that. So, Joseph, you have the floor.
Well, may I ask Joseph a question? Because Joseph has knowledge.
Certainly, then he can respond. Mm-hmm.
Thanks. Joseph,
most definitely.
You have a lot of experience with the actual hands-on campaigning. Now, we just heard about doing a money bomb, but it's my understanding that there are only really two ways to donate money in politics legally, because we're not going that the other way. And one is to make a direct campaign contribution as an individual, and the other is through a political action committee. Could you explain how we can do this if we wanted to do this in a legal fashion? Because the last thing any of us needs is more IRS scrutiny.
You just go to his website. You just go to his website and
No, I would be more than glad to explain that. In most campaigns, there is a limit that a person can donate to a specific campaign. For example, during the Mitt Romney campaign, there was a limit that you could only donate up into $2,500 per person. After $2,500, you can no longer donate any more specifically to the campaign. Now, here's where the super PACs and here's where the other conservative organizations, such as Freedom Works, that have endorsed Matt Bevin, this is why they are so critical, because these organizations are legally allowed, per campaign finance contribution laws, are legally allowed to accept donations in excess of $2,500. So they can accept pretty much unlimited amount of donations. They can accept in the hundreds of thousands or in the millions, and that's where it's very critical. And so directly to the campaign, there's a certain cutoff point that you cannot donate anymore to that specifically to the campaign. But that's where it's very crucial and critical that when a candidate is running, such as Matt Bevin, is that he is able to seek as many endorsements from as many conservative PACs as possible, because these PACs are crucial to the success of the campaign, because they are legally able to pull in the larger amounts of donor bases and funds, and then they're able to allocate it into the campaign and into the areas where it's needed, all by the book, and that's how they're able to wage a viable campaign.
Thank you. That I knew you would know.
Thank you.
Can you name some of the PACs that would be legally able to pull in more funds, Joseph?
Yes, I'd be more than glad to do that. Currently, right now, the TeaPartyExpress.org, although at this current point in time they are not They are not backing at this current point in time. They have not endorsed Matt Bevin. They endorsed other candidates, or the TeaParty.net. These are actually organizations that can what's the word? I'm sorry about that. They can actually legally pull in donations in excess of $2,500, such as the TeaPartyExpress.org, TeaParty.net, TeaParty360, the Tea Party Patriots.
Joseph, real quick, and I hate to interrupt, but, you know, listening to all the show and doing all the little multitasking behind the scenes things that I do here, I really lost track of time. And I see there's only 5 minutes, folks, left of live time. So if you'd like to listen in or to be a part of the extended version of the show, please call us at 347-945-7428. Because if you do not, then the show will unfortunately cut the audio off for you. Now, of course, the archive will be available for your listening after the show. But if not, call in now at 347-945-7428. And another thing I neglected to do this evening, just because of the flow of the conversation tonight, is that something we're doing new here on Bard's Logic is to put out just on Twitter, if you are a Twitter user, just type in listening to Bard's Logic and then put in the link to the show. And then if there's room, put the hashtag PJNet in. And then just send it out to all your followers. I'd appreciate it. And then again, that's put in listening to Bard's Logic and then the link of tonight's show. And then if there's some room, put in the hashtag PJNet. Thank you very much. So if you folks want to listen to the extended version, again, call within the next 3 minutes at 347-945-7428, or you'll miss being able to listen in to that portion or chiming in as well. So thank you for letting me get that out. Joseph, go ahead.
Well, Joseph, may I ask you this? What is the distinction between what a individual candidate can do with the money that they raise and what a political action committee can do with the money that's raised?
Yes, I'll be more than glad to explain the distinction. See, all campaigns have to adhere to the Campaign Finance Committee board. And the Campaign Finance Committee board is basically the handbook for the rules and regulations of how campaigns must conduct themselves and on a financial aspect. And it's a lot of red, how can I say, there's a lot of black and white involved in that, and there's a lot of bureaucracy involved in that. But the current way the system is set up is that the campaigns, regular campaigns, can only take in a certain amount of money per donor, per election cycle. In most cases, it's about $2,500, whether it's a Senate race, a congressional race, or even a presidential race. And that the campaign can pull in. That's the way it's set up. When you hear of many fundraisers that are being conducted during the presidential elections, such as, for example, in 2012, Obama had a fundraiser where it was $35,000 per plate, per person to get in. Now, those are the big donors' bases. Those are the people who are actually able to contribute as much money as they want without any limitations. And the Campaign Finance Committee legally allows that, but they only allow that for PACs or special delegated committees to be able to do that. In essence, it really doesn't make any logical sense because really what the PACs are doing is they're pulling in unlimited amount of funds, and through one means or another, they're funneling it back into the campaign. But unfortunately, that's just the way the system is currently set up and has been set up that way for quite a while.
Thank you. I'm getting an education, and it's nice to hear it explained, just like Mr. Bevin did, so clearly that, you know, a lot of our listeners are pretty smart people, but they're not necessarily sophisticated in their expertise, and we need to get that sophistication. So You've just raised the level of knowledge among everybody listening to the show.
Thank you very much. And I have to say, your insight is really, really incredible. And you seem to be a very passionate person who speaks with great conviction. And I'm just glad you're on our side. And if there were only more patriots like you who had the mentality that you had, I think our country, I think we can agree our country would be in much better shape. But I have the hope that tomorrow will always be a better day, will always be a better day than today.
There are more and more of us every single day, Joseph, more and more of us every day.
We just need to get them out.
Those of you that you want to say goodbye to people, Robert?
Well, I know Joseph said he had to go. And then speaking of expertise, we do have someone with some expertise who called in, and that is our panelist, Kelly Mordecai.
Kelly.
We'll be bringing him in very shortly. So go ahead, Joseph, go ahead and finish up, and then we'll be bringing in Kelly.
Okay, yes, just to wrap up, that is the important distinction in being able to donate. And that's why it's so critical. That's why we have all of these different bastions of Tea Party organizations that are currently set up right now that are endorsing many candidates. And so I urge as many conservatives to view the different Tea Party organizations, because they're also there serving as a source of pulling in funds in unlimited amounts so that they can be able to endorse the candidates with the proper campaign funds so that they can wage a viable campaign and they can have a fighting chance. And so I do urge all my Tea Party patriots and conservatives to look into these different organizations and how they're donor base and structures are set up, and just to get out there, and even if it's $10 or $20, believe me, $10 or $20 can mean the difference between life and death for a candidate's campaign and its fight for survival. And I thank you for having me on your show.
Look forward to hearing from you soon.
You too, Joseph. Take care. We'll see you next week, and we'll keep you posted on when we'll have the money bomb for Mr. Bevin. So without any further ado, I will be opening up the mic to Kelly. Kelly, thank you very much for calling to the show. How are you?
Hey, good. I just got out of a Passover Seder. We have a messianic, I call him rabbi, but he said, life is short. Eat dessert first. So
I have a shirt that.
But, yeah, I'm sorry I missed this. It sounded like you had a really good guest. I had some news from the state of Jefferson, folks.
Oh, yeah,
this
let's hear it.
Yeah, this is hot. Okay, so last fall, Siskiyou County sent a declaration to the state of California saying, look, we want out. And then MODOC came along, their board of supervisors, unanimously. Then Glenn County unanimously. Yesterday, Yuba County said yes. And the crowd, after the supervisors voted, gave a standing ovation. You put these four counties together, we are larger than several eastern states in land area. And so I just, this is really interesting. And I guess there's a new party forming in Jefferson. It's called the Jefferson Party. So it will be interesting to see what happens with that one.
You know, Kelly, people have talked secession, the idea of splitting away from the federal government, and I thought it was a bad idea. But this is a different kind of secession. If we have a new state of Jefferson in Northern California, what that means is that Southern California can continue to have Barbara Boxer and Dianne Feinstein if they want to elect them. that's I don't like those people, but they could elect who they want. On the other hand, there'd be two new senators from the state of Jefferson, and it wouldn't really change proportional representation in the House of Representatives at all, because you'd still have the same numbers of people living in the same geographic distribution. So, what a great thing that is. How close are they, Kelly?
You mean the counties are close to making it happen?
Close to making it happen. What more needs to happen in Northern California to make a new state of Jefferson?
Well, I got to tell you guys, people want it so bad up here, we got two approaches. The first approach, which four counties have signed on to, is the constitutional approach, which Maine did to come out of Massachusetts. Years ago, many years ago, 1800s, early 1800s, Maine was a part of Massachusetts, and they were screaming, hey, we have no reps here. Massachusetts said, whoops, sorry about that, guys. Yeah, send down some reps. And then they convinced the State House in Massachusetts to let Maine break off. And so I believe it's Article 4, where if the state legislature approves, then you go to the feds and get approval, boom, you're your own state. That's how Maine came to being. And so we're working on that, and that's one approach, the constitutional approach. The other approach is called the Republic. And they're coming up quicker because the vote is on June 3rd. It's Measure C here. It's called the Jefferson Republic, and I've the leader of this, his name's Tony Antiso, and he's a decent guy, and I was asking him, what do you mean, Republic? He said, well, kind of like Texas. I said, you mean like the Republic of Texas? He said, yeah. I'm like, oh, my gosh. So right now, I mean, there's two approaches. Some people could say yes to both, no to both. One, vote yes on this one or vote on, you know, anyway. So people are like, they want it really bad. And there's other counties, Trinity and Del Norte and Sutter, I think, too. I'm like, what? So they're really seriously looking into this. Tehama's taking it to the vote again. It's June 3rd, our general election every summer or every other summer. Anyway, so with the declaration approach, we got several coming. It'll take several years, though, because that will require a lawsuit to get us representatives like Maine did to come out of Massachusetts. A federal lawsuit is in progress to get us more reps, and we'll go from 40 state senators to 58. Boom, because there's 58 counties, only have 40 senators. I mean, that's only one rep for 930,000 people, which is worthless. Anyway, we got to be where New Hampshire is, one per 3,200. But if we have more reps, there's a better chance of becoming a state, and that is through the declaration process. Now, the Republic, if they vote on it on the 3rd, then there's going to be, ironically, two parallel governments. And I'm not sure how that really is going to work. I mean, does the existing county supervisors get fired and the Jefferson Republic people? I mean, the guy's claiming that we're going to be our own republic like Texas was its own country. And I'm like, what? And I'm still trying to figure that one out and then how that gets implemented and yada, yada. But that's just kind of, I mean, you see State of Jefferson bumper stickers all over and people wearing State of Jefferson shirts and hats and, I mean, this isn't the first time we've tried. It's been about 12 plus times we've tried this. But
well, what I don't understand is why California would have to be one monolith, because you have a substantial number of people in San Francisco and L.A., San Diego, who really, really seem to like this crazy socialism. They really seem to like it. I don't know if they really like it. Maybe there's a lot more patriots there than we realize. In fact, I'm pretty sure there is. But in the northern part of the state, at least all reports I've seen, it's a very conservative place. It's a very classically liberal place. It's a leave me alone, let me do my thing. I won't bother you. You don't bother me. We'll work together when we want to voluntarily. And why should they be forced to simply put up with what the Nancy Pelosi's want to, you know, look, San Francisco is a weird place, and good for them, all right? And I'm happy. No, seriously, my dad lives there. My sister lives in Oakland. I'm happy for the people there if they have what they want, because that's what America's supposed to be. If that's what you want, move there and do that. And I don't think that if you want to live that kind of lifestyle, you can't live somewhere else. If they want to move in next to me, as long as they're not bothering my family and they're maintaining their property, they can do what they want behind closed doors. I don't care. It's not my business to tell them. And if I do tell them, they can like it or not. But I don't like it when you have this elite group that decides for everybody else. But, folks, you know what? That is the reality of politics. It's a zero-sum game. What that means there's no proportional winning or losing. It's all or nothing. So if you win by one vote, you win everything.
Right. Well, what's happened is if you look at California is a huge agricultural state. You know, like 30% of the fruits and nuts come from California. No, I did not mean San Francisco or L.A. But if you look at, you go to Sacramento about a half an hour, you're into the rice fields in the Central Valley there, and then you got the San Joaquin south of Sacramento, Stockton, Modesto, et cetera, down to Bakersfield. There's a lot of, I knew an almond farmer, and it was amazing, but it's rural. And then you go wrap around Sacramento, and you get into the foothills, there are wineries. In Calaveras County, I won't be surprised if Calaveras County is southeast of Sacramento. Sacramento's kind of just dead in the center of the state. But you go southeast, and you got Calaveras County, then you got Alameda, you've got El Dorado, then you got Placer, then you got Nevada, and you got Alpine. And Alpine has, like, I don't know, 5,000 people. But you sweep around these big cities, okay, Sacramento, L.A., and San Francisco. You sweep around these in the mountains on the east side, the Sierras, up through the north here. We are all very much conservative. We work with our hands. That's your classic conservative. Constitution, leave me alone. But in the big cities, they have the vote. L.A. and San Francisco Bay Area pretty much dictate what the state does. I mean, we get one rep for like four or five counties in the state house, and L.A. has a bunch. It's like this is – it's kind of a mess. I mean, if you guys want to hear the unofficial song of Jefferson Party?
Sure.
I'll sing to you the first line. It's from Josh Thompson way out here. It goes like this. Our houses are protected by the good Lord and a gun. Yeah, my medium oak, if you show up here, now welcome, son.
Well, Kelly, I will just say one thing, which is I've been told this
you
myself.
You sing better than I thought, no?
No, I was going to say, keep your day job.
Well, if you've heard that country song, one of the lines is, you can just leave us alone, Anyway, but we're we're just so high Republican, it's ridiculous. We had an environmental measure, should the dams be removed, yes or no? 80% said no. I mean, it was a non-binding advisory vote, but it's like, woof, you can see our values in that one vote. That only happened like 2 years ago.
It's interesting that you mention the environment, because that seems to be a divisive issue when you look at the press and when you listen to the politicians, but it really isn't. Just like Bob... Robert, who's our leader here on the show, who is an environmentalist. So am I, and that's not a progressive value that's changed with me. What's changed is I don't think that the Bureau of Land Management and the EPA are the solution to everything, especially because they're entirely corrupt. I'm in a pretty Republican area here. There's a lot of Democrats too. There's a lot of union people here, coal miners, but we have a respect for the land. We live on the land. The next valley is all farms. This valley, we've got mines. There's timbering. We use this land, and we want to be able to use it wisely. But the idea that, hey, you can't go up there with your ATV. Now, there are some places, I used to live in Colorado, where there are still wagon ruts from the pioneers because it's that dry, and you really shouldn't be bringing ATVs up there because you're going to scar the land. It's going to stay for hundreds of years. Here, it's wet, and in California, it gets wet, especially in the north. Where there's moisture, you get a constant renewal. And I've seen houses that were left alone, and after 5 or 6 years, they're falling down, and after 10 years, there's nothing left. There's just trees growing there. Now, our land was raped here in this area, in the Anthracite region of Pennsylvania, by corrupt guys who happen to own mines. I'm not against mines or mine owners, just corrupt guys. And we're still remediating the damage that they did, where the streams continue to run orange from chemical runoff from the fractured rocks 100 years plus after they mined. And they've really messed things up, but we're fixing it. And now we have mines, but they don't make less, make no profit. They just make a little less profit because we require them to have a bond, put aside a certain amount of money for remediation. And then when they remove the topsoil, they put it in a safe place. When they've taken the coal, they put the rock and the soil back in the proper manner, and they plant. And, yeah, it looks like it was mined for about 5 years. But with moisture, 5 years along, you've got shrubs. And there's some spots now where we've been doing it for 20 years, and you're hard-pressed to tell between that and virgin land that's never been touched because they've done it properly. And that's all we're asking. That's a conservative value.
Well, yeah, we have the Surface Mining Recovery Act. SMARA helped a client get his permit when he was doing a gravel pit / gold operation. And luckily he was, I guess this was like 8 years ago, and luckily he already had a permit. We just had to upgrade it so he could continue and get going. It really wasn't too bad, but it is so changed now and it takes years. If let's say I happen to find a good gold find, oh, they'll let me do 1,300 yards of material, which I could probably move in a week and I'm done. But after that, you can't move anymore. You have to go through the SMARA process, which costs you probably $150,000, $200,000 in professional fees. And then, you know, all the replacement work is going to be $1 million, so you got to get a bond, which is 10% of your bond cost, that if you don't reclaim the land and make it like it was, they call your bond, and then you still have to pay, but you got to put up $100,000 you'll never see again. So we're talking $250,000, $300,000 before you're even $250,000 to $350,000 before you're even breaking the dirt for a big mining operation. And there's a couple mines that are going into place that they've actually done this. Now, in the early 1900s, we had over 100 gold mines here. I read a book about our history. In 1905, we were not only self-sufficient, we were prospering, we were thriving. Yes, we did some damage. Yes, they said, look, you can't touch these creeks no more. Sorry, that's our water supply. The locals stepped in and protected the environment, especially even other parts around the Sierras. The cattle ranchers couldn't, their cattle couldn't drink the water because it was all mucky from all the hydraulic mining. And so, you know, even back then people were stepping up. But it has gone so far and so stupid. The CEQA is like 4 inches thick, written by two attorneys who now charge like $600 or $800 an hour to consult on CEQA. It has basically shut down access to our resources.
Well, that's the key right there.
Yeah. In this county alone, we have some of the greatest natural resources in the country. You know, a couple of years ago, we had the highest unemployment rate, tremendous alcoholism. We've got, like, for a population of 45,000, we had 193 therapists. We got all these social programs coming in. Well, geez, just let us get to our resources, and we can go ahead and take care of our own.
Well, this is typical of elites. They take a good idea, which is the idea of not destroying land. That's a great idea. Or no child labor. Great idea. These are good things. But they use the impetus that for these ideas, the feelings that we have that, yes, it's justice, to pervert it into something that's nothing more than just bureaucratic control. I'd like to remind our listeners that it's not just energy. It's not just oil and coal and natural gas that we mine. Gold is not just for jewelry and for coins or a possible monetary basis for our money. Gold is used in all kinds of electronic applications. It's mm-hmm. the only thing that doesn't corrode, and it can be made very, very thin. If you take apart your cell phone right now, not completely, and there's some phones I guess you can't do that with, but take apart anything electronic and just look inside, and you'll see things that look like silver and gold. And guess what, folks? That is silver and gold. It's not more than a couple of dollars worth. But it's required for proper electronics. You want to give that up? There are some things like palladium and platinum, which are precious metals. I used to work in jewelry, and they're great for jewelry. They're also incredibly useful for catalytic converters, which are not just those things on your car, but that permits us to have smokestacks that don't put out a whole lot of pollution. There's no end to the things that we need, that we have, that we can't use, that we send to other countries because we have rules that we're not supposed to use them before some, you know, abstract idea about global warming or carbon sequestration or, you know, protecting the environment. But what ends up happening is they get used anyway in places where they don't have rules. And it's funny how those are the friends of Obama and his ilk. They are their pals. And I don't pay any attention to the rhetoric when it comes to foreign policy or domestic policy. If you want to know who their friends and enemies are, you look at what they do. They speak about transparency and openness, and they speak about using our resources. And both parties have told us for how many decades that we would cut illegal immigration or that we would be energy independent. And here we are in 2014, and we're further from those goals than we ever were before, and it's a function of the power that these people have had in their hands. Had they wanted to accomplish this, they would have accomplished this long ago. I'm convinced that if we put people like Mr. Bevin into the Senate, into the Congress, into all the state houses, into the governor's mansions across the country, then we can actually rebound from this terrible mess very, very quickly. You know, you remove unnecessary regulations from small businesses that create jobs. You allow us to get our resources and use them properly. You do these things and remove all the strictures of unelected bureaucrats who don't know anything better, take away control, distribute that control to each local municipality as much as possible, allow school districts to be run locally instead of mandated from Washington or from the state capital, and what you're going to end up with is a resurgence not only of liberty, but the money that comes with it.
Oh, yeah. Well, and
real quick, gentlemen, I'm going to bring Cindy back in and Harriet as well. They'd like to chime in, so let's go ahead and bring in Cindy. Cindy, go ahead.
Well, I just wanted to say one more time. I really don't really have a lot more to say, but I just wanted to say one more time, you know, I think we really need to do something for Matt. And what we did in Sammy's show, you remember when we were doing Newt
right. Mm-hmm.
Money Bombs, we just sent people to Newt.org, and we said, you know,
right.
Send him your check and pledge your money there and, you know, put it on your credit card or whatever you want to do. and I think, you know, that's how you have to handle it when you're doing a blog talk money bomb. You just have to, you don't, the money doesn't come to you. It goes directly to the candidate.
Right.
And I think it would behoove us to get involved in that because we got to start getting involved. I know everybody says all politics are local, and they really like to promote, you know, local politics, and I'm one of those. I have done a lot of stuff here locally. But I think this is important enough that the whole nation needs to turn its eyes towards Kentucky. And we need to do something about this. And that's all I really have to say. You guys are doing a great job, and I'm just sitting here listening, getting educated.
Okay. We appreciate it, Cindy. Just chime in and cut us off if you need to. We go too long without you coming in. And so go ahead, Harriet, if there's anything you'd like to add on.
Yeah, I'll just take a minute. Yes, I've been getting educated this evening, particularly how the donation with the PACs for the campaign from Joseph has been very interesting. I've already just signed in to Matt Bivens' Facebook page, and I have been inviting people to join, and they are joining in tonight.
Awesome.
So
good job.
That's my little thingy for the night.
Well, I want to just embarrass you for a moment, Harriet, and
that's okay.
Talk about something bigger. I was so pleased when you got published with your first very serious article, and it was a very good article. It's extremely well-researched and well-written and well-received on veterans, the plight of veterans. But I want to see more. So I'm going to embarrass you here publicly and say I expect to see another really good article about that subject or whatever else, because you know so many different things. And that's one really important way to reach people. A lot of people don't have the time to do the research, and it's good when you promote something on the Internet and share it after you've vetted it and made sure it's correct. But if you've got the power and this is, goes for all of the listeners out there, if you have the power to express yourself in words, and it may not be real easy, but if you can do it, there are people who will resonate to your words. You don't have to sound like everybody else. There's a lot of different styles out there. But there are people just like you who are going to read those words, and they're going to wake up, or they're going to be converted, or they're going to be energized, or they're going to be educated, or maybe all of those things. And that's something I want to see more of.
Well, thank you. I plan to, but it's just overwhelming that the article was published on Dr. Rich Swire's page, and since then, Governor Scott in Florida has come up with what he's doing for the veterans and da-da-da-da-da, and now connecting with the veterans, nationwide, what they're doing suddenly has been showing its head. Not that I ever noticed before, and now I've been contemplating either a follow-up, and I also have been doing some research and connecting with people who have lived in Russia recently and have moved to the U.S. and other states, how life is living and working in Russia. Let's get direct from the people who know rather than people who claim to be doing research on Russia, because we know that a lot of it is only propaganda.
Well, when it comes down to it, as an editor, I can tell you, everybody out there, what publishers look for is stuff that sounds good all the way through. It has a beginning and a middle and an end, and it tells a story. And what the good editors and the Patriot websites, and I can put you in touch with any number of them if you can't find them on your own. And you can find me on Facebook or Twitter or whatever, and it's fine, Dan Gray. And I can't tell you the number because I don't take credit for numbers. It's not my work. It's other people's work that I've helped along a little bit and then introduced them, and then they take it from there.
Well, what's interesting is the fact that if you I'm going to go into, if I can get into the research, the basis of people who actually are planning to move into Russia as opposed to people who are requesting to move out of Russia.
You're breaking up a little bit, hon.
Okay, I'm sorry. We hear that Russia, the good things Russia's doing, blah, 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 but we know that in third world countries, and believe me, I've traveled to those third world countries twice in my life, and what you hear is what they want you to hear. So to get the real facts about anything is nearly impossible. Communism is alive and well in Russia. Also, capitalism is doing something there as well, and people do have a better life and more religious freedom and blah, 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 blah. But if they belong to the Communist Party, they get more benefits.
Well, you know, that's a good story. And there are a lot of untold stories, and there are a lot of stories here in this country that you won't find in the mainstream press. And there's a lot of bogus information that you will find on the Internet. It's very hard to tell the difference. So if you find a true story, and this is not just for you, this is for everybody, if you find something true that has not been reported, that people don't know about, that you think they should know about, and it could be something as simple as doing a Freedom of Information Act request and getting the budget from your local school district and going over that if you're good with numbers. It could be something about waste in government or fraud. It could be a story about people, human interest stories. Everyone loves to read those, and they can illustrate points. You won't see on the mainstream press about people who are denied benefits under Obamacare. And sometimes it's a congressman like the next district up, Congressman Barletta from Hazleton, that's not that far from me, who embarrassed the heck out of Sebelius by insisting that this 10-year-old girl, I think she was 10, she's 11 now, be reinstated to the transplant list, even though they said she wasn't worth it. She's doing fine. That made national press because a congressman was behind it. But there are a lot of other stories about people who are denied benefits, denied cancer treatments under this new regime that is not more fair. It's less fair than what was before, which was flawed. And it's important to bring these facts out. One thing you have to be very careful of, just like Harriet is, you have to make certain that you know your facts. When we have people like Kelly come on, or Joseph, or James, and they're telling us stuff, they've made certain that it's true, or they say, I don't know. And you'll also note that when you have a candidate like Mr. Bevin, he's also very careful to say something is true. He thinks something is true. He feels something is true. There's a difference. You can say anything is true if you feel it. You can say, I feel this way. Who can argue with you? If you say you think this is true, you've got to provide arguments. But when you say something is true, the only thing you have to provide is multiple independently verified sources. You have to actually do a little bit of homework. I know that sounds hard, folks. But think about it this way. If there was a website, and I know numbers of these, that was starving for really good content, that had to fill up their pages every single day so readers would come back and not be bored, and you wrote one article a year, and if there were 50 of you, that's one article different every single day, or rather every single week. That's not that many. If you can write an article a month, you're doing great. And it doesn't have to be long. We're talking about 500 to 1,500 words. And quite frankly, most people, if you start writing and it turns into a book, write a book and sell it as a book. I can help you with that too if you want. But most people don't have the time for this in their lives. And with the education system being what it's been for so long, they don't have the attention spans either. So you've got to grab them in the first article. You'll note that when Mr. Bevin came on...
What were you saying?
Yeah, what was that?
No. I was distracted.
Speaking of writing
what was
book,
I saying about...
Go ahead, Shelley.
Am I going on too long? I'm sorry.
Yeah. Maybe I should write a book someday. You know, I start a whole book of times. I get something, I'm distracted. Then I write another one. I start another one. I got to focus. What? Okay.
You have wrote a book, Kelly.
That's right. I forgot about that. Yeah, I got distracted again.
Maybe something about Jefferson, because you were quoting stats and figures and details that I was unaware of, and I should be aware of it, and so should the rest of us, because this affects all of us.
Here's a big fact, okay? So I told you, you know, in the Senate, you got 930,000 people per one senator. I mean, good luck competing and getting a hold of a state house senator, 465 for this house. Now in New Hampshire, okay, this is huge. This, you know, a buddy of mine turned me on to this. I'm like, oh my gosh, you're right. New Hampshire has one rep per 3,200 people. They have high turnover. Their campaign costs are low. They only meet like 6 months a year in New Hampshire. They have no safety belt laws, no car insurance required, no helmet laws. It's an open carry state. What else? Justice of the Peace, where you don't have to be an attorney. They have trial by jury nullification. As a defense, you can go ahead and tell. I mean, they are very sensitive to the people there, one per 3,200. You know, so it's stunning. And so we're screaming. I'm going to go back to local control, then I'm going to jump into some victory for the Republicans and helping with this gentleman in Kentucky. All right, so local control, right? You know, Jefferson Party met a couple days ago. They passed the platform plank, local control over local issues. Hey, that's not a new concept. Magna Carta, C-13. The barons told the king, you know what? You can control London. We don't care. You will respect our local customs in our towns, our villages, and our counties. So what a concept. No longer is a king's forest, because you got starving people needing to go hunt a deer. So that's awesome. Now, this is encouragement for getting involved in politics, okay? And Kentucky, Rand Paul, he's got his people there. Tennessee, there's another good story through the precinct strategy. It's either Tennessee or Kentucky. They took over the Republican Party by the precinct strategy, which Jim Condon talked about, where basically nobody else, typically in a lot of precincts, nobody runs for office. Now, you have a county convention where all the precinct captains show up, and you can kick people out of the county. You know, the good old boys, the old guard, you can kick them out. But it was either Tennessee or Kentucky where they actually did that, and they took over the party. And Ms. Lee, I just talked to her this, was it Monday when she got out of the state convention in Nevada? Now, we think about Nevada. Nevada, that's right, Ron Paul won Nevada, one of the six states that he actually won.
allowing him to be speaking on the floor, but they changed the rules to 8. All right. She told me that, I mean, she was at the state convention. There was like 550 people there, and a whole bunch of Liberty people have gotten in and taken over the party, and finally they're winning people over, and they're getting a lot of Liberty platforms into the Republican platform. It's like, oh, my gosh. So, but she said they've been at this since 2009. Or was it 2007? 2009. So that's been 5 years, and they have finally gotten a huge Liberty caucus that's starting to take control. In Iowa, a Ron Paul guy is the chair of the Iowa Republican Party. What am I saying? Ron Paul has done enormous amount by running and getting people connected, united, and taking over the Republican Party. Rand has paved quite a bit of the road in Kentucky. You know, Rand Paul, and this man was on the phone too, and I'm sorry I'm missing his name because I was busy. But when we start running, donating, helping, not only do candidates start getting elected, but old guard gets removed. We're talking neocons. We're talking rhinos. This is why we should be active, folks, except I'm a libertarian. But anyway, but it's encouraging to hear these stories that we don't have to just sit down. You know, Minnesota, during their Ron Paul campaign, at the state convention, they won for Ron Paul. And in several of the county caucuses, the people there knew Robert's Rules of Order. If you don't know Robert's Rules of Order, old guard will stay in power. Anyway, so they knew this, and they were calling the chair, like, no, you're not telling us who the delegates are, and then we vote for them. No, we're nominating from the floor. And they kept sending their delegates up to the state, and Minnesota went for Ron Paul. And in one of these specific caucuses, so watching this video, a gentleman had been attending the Republican conventions for years. He said, you know what? They kept pushing us around for years. We didn't like this guy, but okay, we're Republicans. We go along. But you guys, thank you. You have beat them at their own game, and you got your people. This is representative government here in the county convention. And, folks, that's what we have to do, precinct strategy and no Robert's Rules, get in there. And that's what they did in Nevada. It took them, you know, since 2009. But that's what a great thing that what candidates do is they unite people, and hopefully they'll train them on the inner universe, and it is the universe, of the interior party politics. So it's exciting.
It is, and listen, I don't care what person's party affiliation is, if they're or what they – the labels are, if it's for Constitution and common sense. As I said, we elected a libertarian just 10 miles from here in the most conservative, and I don't mean conservative politically, I mean these people don't change and they don't want change and they like things the way they are and they're very stayed in their ways. And they got totally fed up with spending a heck of a lot of money on taxes and getting nothing for it and seeing a lot of corruption. And they elected somebody who they thought they could trust. And so far, he's doing a really good job. And I don't care if he calls himself a libertarian. He's a great guy. So, boy, you know, you need to write another book.
Yeah, I'd have to agree with that, Kelly.
Well, let me throw this out to you, okay? Why am I so politically active? You know, I'm about to be 48. When I was at Iowa State in 1988, I was 21 years old, okay? And I was working a co-op job, kind of took a year off at work, but I had a flexible schedule. I got my work done, whatever. I got involved in the Pat Robertson campaign. And they saw me, and I don't know why they picked me, but I was like the chairman of the ISU for Pat Robertson. And we won. We beat Bob Dole. I was 21. I hardly knew what in the heck was going on. What's party politics? What's a caucus? Never been to a caucus before. And a buddy and I, Tim, we got bumped up to county delegates. And we're like, how did this happen? Well, we just got voted in by the people we brought in. And then somehow I got thrown into district delegate, and I have no idea how that happened, but I was at the district convention at 21. I'm like, what? I felt from this experience that the world is not so far out of reach. It is a smaller world than we think. And when we get people into these positions who love the Constitution, we got our numbers there, we can literally start changing parties and the way business as usual is done. And that inspired me, that one event. Sorry, it felt like I was blundering around.
But that one event changed my life to realize I really can make a difference. You go through this, and you'll experience the same thing.
I want everybody out there to do something similar to what Kelly did as a young man, and it mirrors some of my own experiences. I want you to go out and pick an issue, a candidate, or as many of these issues as you can handle. I mean, obviously, you've got lives, you've got families, you've got jobs. You can't do everything all the time. But pick at least one thing that really, really gets to your heart, that really, really socks you in the gut, that makes perfect sense in your mind. Pick something and start being active on it and working with those other people. You'll find there are already people working on it. And if there aren't a whole lot, bring some to it. And you'll be surprised. It doesn't matter what it is. Honestly, it doesn't matter. If you can be involved in something big like a Senate race, like supporting a candidate like Matt Bevin, that's fantastic. But every single attack that we can make on the status quo that's ruined this country is an attack that costs them time, it costs them money, it costs them attention, and it brings us closer. What's more, Kelly just shared a success story with you. That made you feel good, and it made you feel like you could do it. When you have that success story, whatever it is, maybe it's bringing a library to your town or getting rid of one corrupt official or electing someone really, really decent or a slate of really decent candidates, even to just a school board, whatever it is, helping with a no-kill animal shelter, it doesn't even have to be politics. That gives you that feeling of mastery and success. It teaches you the tools that are required to win because they're the same tools for the left and the right, except that we can't lie about things or vote three or four times. But it's the same basic tools of politics.
Here's a simple thing people can do. Go to their county, their county central committee, okay, for example, or maybe if the Republic, like here we have the Republicans winning women's, the Republican women's are having a business luncheon. And they want to charge $40 a plate, but that's fine. Or any kind of thing where you start learning about Republican functions, for example. All right? If you want to go that way, Republican, you know, God bless you. That's your choice. Keep your Constitution at your side. But I'm saying just talk to some of these people that are in the party and how do I get more involved in the party? And how do I come to maybe a central community meeting and just kind of watch what happens?
Well, you can
because
get
there
an
are,
actual
there
education.
Are ropes. Yeah. Get out. Yeah, hold on, Dan.
Go ahead.
There are ropes, okay, this is key. There are ropes to how the universe of a party, and I see universe because it is so different. There are ropes to the interior workings of a party. And you have to understand how they work, and you watch Robert's Rules and this and that, and blah, blah, blah. You start volunteering, they might just lap you up. They might just love you. They might appoint you to something, and then you can bring a few more friends. Lake County, California, the Ron Paulers took over. The Republicans' old guard was so frustrated they walked out. I mean, it's not that hard.
Well, whether it's easy or hard, it's worth it. You can get a tutorial and primer from various organizations, and you can find a lot of the information on the website, even if they don't have an active state organization or if you don't have the time yet to get to one of their functions. Precinct Project and American Majority are two great ones. And by the way, I happen to know for a fact that we have some listeners who are Democrats and who are libertarians, who are not Republicans at all. I myself am not a registered Republican at this point. I am a Constitution Party member. The point is not what party you're in. The point is taking back local control and insisting on honesty and our Constitution. So any Democrats out there in specific, if you are really unhappy with the idea that these people are saying that they're Democrats, saying that they're liberals, saying they're progressive, and then taking your rights, and then forcing control on you, and taking all the money that you earn, and not doing their jobs, and not doing the things that you believe in, well, there's a simple solution to that, too. You can take back that party. And I for one, would really, really love to see a rejuvenated Democratic Party as well as a Republican Party. Now, I'll give you a challenge because the Republican Party, the people who want to take that back and make it responsive locally and make it honest, fair, and clean, constitutional, we're way ahead of you. So if you don't think that our values are the correct values in all regards, if you think that you've got better ideas, well, got news for you. You're not going to get them passed through those idiots who are in office now, those cronies corrupt people. So if you want to see your agenda, I'm willing to debate it. But we won't even have the opportunity to debate as long as it's just two sides of the same corrupt coin. So take what belongs to you.
Well, yeah, I want to throw out another story about, well,
real quick, Kelly, I do want to let folks know that we're going to have to start, unfortunately, start wrapping things up. I know time goes fast. It's already, we already have less than 15 minutes left of even the extended version, so we're going to have to start, you know, doing our final comments so that I could start to close things down for the evening. I was speaking with someone about our guest next week, or I was chatting rather, who was James Carr from, as you guys mentioned, different parties. And personally, I wouldn't mind seeing America adopt kind of like an Irish system, especially with multi-party systems and the way they do voting as well. So I really like how they do things there. I think it's just better representation. But we do have James Carr from the Libertarian Party who's running for Congress in Virginia, and he will be on next week on April the 23rd. So we're looking forward to that. So if we could, if we just unfortunately finish up our last comments and get everyone at least a few minutes. So go ahead and finish your thought, Kelly and Dan, and then have some parting comments from the ladies, and then we'll have to close down the show for tonight.
Go ahead, Kelly.
Okay. Well, yeah, I want to encourage people. You know, I already said this. This is from the Department of Redundancy Department. But get involved in the inter-party workings, because endorsements are very powerful, all right? The State Libertarian Convention, we endorsed several candidates, yeah. But what if the body didn't endorse someone? Oh, they didn't get our endorsement, did they? Now, isn't that interesting? And Republicans do the same thing. And by the way, while I was there giving a presentation on grand jury, they liked that. They threw me to the national convention, and they also put me on some committee I didn't even know I was on or what it was for about a week. But, I mean, that's just like they're eager for young, energetic blood. But the endorsement, this candidate, and this is party business. This candidate, yay or nay. And so when you're at a local or a function within a party, and you have a bunch of your people there, and you find out this guy doesn't like the Constitution, and you vote him down, he doesn't get an endorsement. Now, isn't that strange? Your guy gets in there, he really likes the Constitution, you guys have enough bodies in the party, he gets your endorsement. These are just good old boy tricks. They've known this, and they run circles around us until we finally, and that's what I'm so excited about, conventions and all that I've learned, and like, oh my gosh, there's so much inner workings. It completely directs things that most people don't understand. It's not that hard to get involved, folks.
Well, you know what? You're absolutely right about that. To get involved is not hard. To win against entrenched interests who have everything stacked against them is difficult. Just 2 points, and this is related to what you said, and it deals with Pennsylvania because it's kind of a microcosm. We're like the battleground state for the whole country right now, it seems, although you won't know it until the press reports on the elections. We don't want endorsements. We don't want endorsements from parties at all. We want open, clean primaries. And what's more, we want to reform the electoral laws, because right now, if you want to run as a Democrat or a Republican for governor, let's say, then you needed 2,000 signatures on petitions to be on the ballot for governor of the entire state of Pennsylvania. We have like 12, 13 million people. But if you want to run as our friend who was Green Party candidate was a couple of weeks ago, if you want to run as a Libertarian, if you want to run as a Constitutionalist, if you have a different idea, you need like 70,000 signatures. 70,000 compared to 2,000. So what that means is that if you have a different idea, you don't get a chance to present it to the public. Here in Pennsylvania, Ralph Nader ran for senator a couple years back, and I don't agree with a lot of Ralph Nader's political views, but I do think he's an honest man who cares about America. I do think he believes in the Constitution, at least his understanding of it. And his petitions were challenged, and he thought he had enough. He ended up having to pay the court costs of the challengers, and not only did
That's
he get
ridiculous.
His message out so that nobody would have an opportunity to choose whether they wanted to vote for what he stood for or not, which is a fair choice that I can live with. Even if he won, I could live with it if it was a fair choice and not fraud and collusion. But he ended up having $100,000 of his personal money from his book sales or whatever he made money off over the years. He's not very rich. Seized from his bank account under court order because he lost a primary challenge as far as getting his signatures on. That's not right, folks. No matter what side you're on, that's not right. So I'll toss it over to who's next, Bob?
Agreed. I think we have Cindy and then Harriet, and then I'll have to close things out. So give it a couple minutes, ladies, and then I'll have to end things tonight.
Hey there. I just had one last parting comment to say something about our party is actually in big trouble. Kelly was saying, "Hey, get to know the inner workings of your party, get involved. This is all a great idea until the establishment of your party decides they don't want to follow the rules, and then they go and change the rules on you by ramming it through, in the convention, whatever their agenda is, that's what they get, That was extremely, I was all gung-ho about working for the Republican Party and the candidates, I was really feeling optimistic all through that presidential election until I began to hear, all the different things that they were doing along the primary road that was totally against our Republican green papers, and our rules were getting broke left and right. And then at the convention, they basically rammed down everyone's throat and just absolutely ran roughshod over Ron Paul and his supporters. I'm surprised there's any Ron Paul supporters left in our party. They're really stalwart to stay in this party after how they were treated. And that is something that has to change in our party before we're going to, we've got to get our party reformed before we're going to have any chance of making reforms in this nation and changing the things back that Obama already changed for us. But we really need to get together on that. The Tea Party needs to stay together. All the different the American Majority. There's just a ton of them out there doing such a good job at getting their people informed and educated, and they've all got to, they're all working as a nonpartisan sort of umbrella. If it's really nice to have, I came this close, Dan, to joining Constitution Party because I really liked what they stood for and their candidate from last election. But, I thought really the hope of our nation, if we start a new party with all these conservative people going into the same party, you're in the place where they were in the mid 1800s when they began the Republican Party, where they split off the Whigs and it was 10 years before they had, actually I think that was awesome that it was only 10 years before they had a presidential nominee, which was Abraham Lincoln.
Right.
For them to take 10 years, I thought was really good. And if we could do it in 10 years, I'm sorry, but I think that's too late.
Yeah,
so,
I think you're right.
And
unfortunately, Cindy will have to, cut that off and then bring it to Harriet. But no, I agree. And, there's a large feeling out there
that, or at least agree with this large feeling out there that we don't have that type of time. But go ahead, and I really like to explore, of course, as election seasons go on here in 2014 and then 2016. But go ahead, Harriet, because we only got a couple minutes left.
Yeah, I just want to end with, it's been another terrific program. And but what I want to say is right now, looking toward the future, it's very, very important to concentrate on the 2014 election, which is this year. Talking is over. Action is needed. We got a lot of information tonight on what action to take and where to go and what to do. And the 2016 election, to me, will take care of itself. If we get a good Senate and House elected this year, true conservatives that will support whoever will be president, I will be happy.
Amen.
That's my
answer. Thank you very much for coming on, Harriet, and your comments. And
you're welcome.
Just to get a, go ahead, shut things off. Go ahead.
Yes, yes. I'm all done for the night.
All right. Well, thank you very much, Harriet. And, you know,
you're welcome.
I do think
thank
that we
should. Thank you for having me.
Oh, you're welcome. And with 2016, whoever's going to be building an organization, perhaps maybe not doing the campaigning, but they should be building organizations, getting support now, or if they have any old debts, such as Newt Gingrich, for those to be paid off. Now, personally, I'd like to see him run again, but, of course, that won't happen unless the old debts get paid off first, and that's something I'd like to talk about at some other time and maybe have a show dedicated to it or a number of shows. But I want to thank everyone, of course, for coming on. There's so many. It'd take up all the time if I just named everybody. So I just want to say thank you very much, and we are looking forward to having James Carr, who is running for U.S. Congress in Virginia for the Libertarian Party on next week. And, of course, it was a pleasure having Matt Bevin on and staying on as long as he did tonight. And so definitely check out a few things.
Good night, everybody, and Cindy, and everybody. Okay, night.
Good night, Harriet. And good night, folks, and then take care. And then, of course,
good night, John Boy. Good night, Mary Ellen.
Good night, John Boy.
She jumped off the line, or she's off the line. So check out www.BardsLogicPoliticalTalk.com. Check out the sponsor page on there, both ladies and gents, to see what they've got for you. And then also the Patriot Journalist Network at www.PatriotJournalist.com. And I will end tonight, as I do every night, and hopefully we'll be able to hear the whole song by Aubrey Ashburn. And you can hear more of her music by going to www.AubreyAshburn.com. Take care. And as you folks said, good night, and we'll see you next week. Thank you.